Throughout history, the suppression of revolutionary energy technologies points to a pattern of inventors meeting untimely or suspicious ends, apparently protecting entrenched interests in the fossil fuel narrative and traditional power systems. Nikola Tesla, who died in poverty amid claims of suppressed wireless energy transmission ideas. Tom Ogle, whose vapor fuel system promised extraordinary mileage before his 1981 death from an overdose ruled accidental or suicidal, and Stanley Meyer, developer of a controversial water fuel cell, who perished in 1998 from a cerebral aneurysm despite persistent poisoning rumors.
He has developed what's called a water fuel cell. It has taken the place of his old gas tank. The water fuel cell breaks down water molecules into oxygen and hydrogen. The hydrogen is used to run his dune buggy.
I don't care if you use rainwater, well water, city water, ocean water. If you don't have any fresh water, go ahead and use snow. If you don't have any snow available to you, then use salt water because there's no adverse effect to the fuel cell.
Meyer started working on this project 4 years ago. He's not a scientist. He isn't even a chemist. In fact, he never graduated from college. Meyer was determined, he says, to design something to protect this country from oil embargoes.
And we have calculated that if we take the dune buggy from Los Angeles to New York, we would roughly use 22 gallons of water.
The Pentagon flew a lieutenant colonel in last week to look at Meyer's invention. There's talk of possibly using it in the Star Wars defense program and to run army tanks.
Recently, Aaron Salter Jr., a retired police officer working as a security guard at a Tops grocery store in Buffalo, New York, was passionately developing a hydrogen electrolysis system to power vehicles with water as an alternative to gasoline.
You got your hydrogen for your electrolysis, you got your batteries, your water. I'm just going to start it.
That's the gas valve in the rear. It's in off position. The vehicle is running on pure hydrogen.
He was tragically killed in the 2022 racially motivated mass shooting at that store.
The defendant's planning of a racially motivated attack occurred over a span of several months.
And just a mere days ago, on December 15th, 2025, Nuno Loureiro, a distinguished MIT professor and director of the Plasma Science and Fusion Center, specializing in fusion energy, a potentially limitless clean power source, was fatally shot in his Brookline home.
Many of you know that fusion is the process that powers stars. So the reason that they shine is because at their very core, there are fusion reactions going on that essentially release the energy that keeps the stars alive and shining. We speak of the plasma state of matter as the word that best describes the state at which the matter is at these very high pressures and temperatures that you find in the core of stars, such as the sun. And so essentially, in a sort of a slogan, kind of way, what we're trying to do at the Plasma Science and Fusion Center is to recreate star-like conditions on Earth, aiming to tap that energy, the fusion energy, for electricity or energy production. In case there's questions about why we're trying to do this, there's a long list of reasons that range from no polluting emissions to inexhaustible fuel supply, very energetic reactions, so 10 to the 7 more energetic than a chemical reaction, no risk of meltdowns or long-lived nuclear waste, civilization-scale energy, and flexibility to generate fusion energy pretty much anywhere.
Apparently, a janitor named Derek, who worked as a janitor at Brown University, had previously, that is before the shooting, according to him, alerted the Brown University police that there was an intruder that had been lurking around the building, but yet nothing was done. We also learned that there were a number of electronic devices discovered in the storage unit that he had, and a number of other things, perhaps thumb drives that he had, all of which point to the idea that this was some elaborate plot. He did a lot of casing, a lot of pre-planning, a lot of recon.
Nothing to see here. Move along. Move along. The established families, dug in for centuries with their iron grip around the throat of humanity, will never relinquish control. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Music. Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me.
Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at the alexjonesstore.com.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Good morning. Welcome to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Oh, man. Document dump indeed. We just got a bunch of documents in from the DOJ in regards to the Epstein files that we are sifting through right now. And of course it happens right before we go to air. We are digging though through it, and apparently it's going to have some mentions of President Donald Trump. Now the DOJ is claiming that this latest batch of documents, although it will include President Trump's name, is something that was probably just meant to be interference in the 2020 election. So just keep that in mind. We're digging through it, though. We'll bring it to you as we find all of the very latest on that front. But there's a lot more going on all around the country. We're excited that you're jumping on board with us today. You know, I went to go look at the president's schedule today, and he's got nothing on his calendar. So he's starting early. He's starting early. There's nothing on President Trump's calendar for today. I'm sure he's got a bunch of stuff happening at Mar-a-Lago, though privately, that the public will not be invited to, so that will be interesting. But we have a lineup of incredible guests joining us later today. As many of you guys know, it's the holiday season. By holiday season, we would normally say Merry Christmas. I normally say Merry Christmas, but everyone forgets about Kwanzaa. All right, that's a serious one. Everyone forgets about Kwanzaa, but Harrison Smith does not forget about Kwanzaa. In fact, he's going to be joining us later today to spread some Kwanzaa cheer and give us the lowdown on everything related to Kwanzaa. He'll be joining us in studio later today to do just that. We'll also be giving you some overview of the latest in Venezuela, as well as the latest on the fight to preserve the Second Amendment that's going on right now at the DOJ. We'll have a 2A attorney on the program today to detail just that. But a lot happening over here. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us. I wanted to get into the first story. Let's talk about Hunter Biden for a second, because Hunter Biden's been doing a bunch of interviews now that his father's no longer president, probably bleeding for money. That's what one would assume. And he's trying his very best to stay relevant. And he did just that with the Sean Ryan show. Sean Ryan show, obviously something that I do enjoy watching. But I think it was a 5-hour interview. I didn't see the whole thing. All right, I'll admit it. We watch bits. I could only tolerate Hunter Biden for so long. But I want to get to clip one, because Hunter Biden trying to rewrite history, and it's a great one, mainly because of the fact that he hopes that you're just as stupid as he is, or maybe he's just smoking crack and he hopes you are as well. Take a listen.
So what I can tell you about the laptop is that there is no laptop. That's bullshit. What was provided out there,
there was no laptop.
There is an actual physical laptop that somebody had, but the guy that said he had the laptop, the existence of the search for a laptop came before he was even a twinkle in Rudy Giuliani's eye. There were people, talk to Lev Parnas. Lev Parnas literally went to Ukraine to get a laptop from Dmitry Firtash, to get a hard drive, Hunter Biden's hard drive, from Dmitry Firtash and Andrei Derkach in Ukraine, in Austria. 4 months before John Paul McIsaac nobody ever existed. And so what they did is they cobbled together stolen, concocted, fabricated mishmash of digital information, largely which is, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of emails from 25 years. I mean, no laptop could have held all of that. And so what they did is they just, they put it all together and then they talk about it. I mean, John Paul McIsaac, who is literally blind, has no, there's no videotape of me ever dropping off a laptop. There's no, so whatever.
You never dropped off a laptop?
I have no recollection whatsoever of ever dropping off a laptop to John Paul McIsaac, to his shop. And so what he did though, let me just put it this way. Say I did. Say I took my laptop in to get repaired. Okay? And you're John Paul McIsaac. And what he says is he reads and he goes to repair the laptop, but then he starts to read the files in the laptop. And he reads a file and he sees files about Burisma. By the way, a board of which I'm on, of an independent private Ukrainian company in which I am a board member doing corporate governance as an attorney. And he says that the only thing that he can think of doing is calling Rudy Giuliani. He's a laptop repair shop owner in Wilmington, Delaware, whose store is 3.5 miles at most from where my parents live, where everybody knows my parents live. So if he had a laptop that he wanted to return, he thinks that the best thing to do is call Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, Bob Costello, and give it to my sworn enemy, who then take it, and in it, I will once again ask you this question. What crime has anyone ever...
But there was no laptop, right?
No. He took a hard drive. He took whatever he said. He said that he had a damaged laptop, and what he did is he downloaded a hard drive, and then he gave that hard drive to Bob Costello. And then from that hard drive, you have people like Patrick Byrne and Jack Maxey and a whole bunch of other people. Like, I could list the names that come together. There's one woman that's like known as Cat Lady or something like that, literally. And what they say that they did is they cobbled together all of this digital material that was floating out everywhere, that had been stolen from phones, that had been taken from the dark web, that had been taken from the hard drive that John Paul
McIsaac. They consolidated it all.
And they consolidated it all, and they made it out to be this thing. And so then the story doesn't become about the laptop at all, because there's nothing in the laptop other than a record of me being a degenerate drug addict, at the worst moment in my life. At the worst moment of my life, of people clearly, me not taking selfies, of people clearly taking pictures of me in the rooms that I found myself in. Smoking crack, doing drugs, doing whatever. Nothing criminal. Other than, obviously, drug use. And what other people would think is, you know, abhorrent behavior. I mean, whatever. I mean, having sex with women. And so they take that, and then you can say whatever you want. No one read the stories. When you put me naked on the front page of the New York Post over and over again with a crack pipe in my mouth, it becomes like gold. And Miranda Devine said it was the most read, the most followed story in the history of the paper.
Wow.
She's written and sold 2 best-selling books based upon that. And it's all about the pictures. It's like sex, drugs, and politics, man.
Well, for the record, Hunter Biden was never an actual politician. In fact, he was just the son of a politician. So before he pretends like this was all political, remember that. Remember that. And while he sits there and tries to rewrite history, did you hear him just try to pretend like the laptop wasn't real? You see, this is the funny part about Hunter Biden. He actually filed several lawsuits in regards to all of this, those claims you just saw there. He tried to claim that the material that was in the laptop was stolen. All of a sudden, though, he dropped those lawsuits. You know why? Because that argument is true, and he wanted to get his way into discovery to prove it. Well, he would have just kept the lawsuit going, but he didn't. See, there's a thing with Hunter Biden. He's trying to rewrite history. He's hoping you're just as stupid as he is. And unfortunately, there wasn't much in the way of pushback regarding those claims. He has no evidence that these individuals, who I would say probably should consider possibly suing him for defamation, He's trying to make it seem like they all conspired against him, and it doesn't seem like that, in fact, is the case. He's good at playing the victim card, and not just for himself, for his own dad. In clip two, he also goes around and pretends like his father was a victim while occupying the White House. Take a listen.
There are a lot of people in government right now, president included, who are too old to be there.
I can go through a series of rationales for why my dad decided to run for a second term. He's the only guy that was able to beat Donald Trump. He got more votes than anyone that has ever run for president of the United States by 7 million votes. And in a 2-year period of time, he passed more bipartisan legislation than any president since Lyndon Johnson. He would have passed immigration reform if Trump hadn't kiboshed it at the end. Based upon that success, and based upon the feeling that while he was losing a physical step, while his speech slowed, that he still had the capacity to be able to make the most important decisions that had led to the successes that he's had up until that point. And then what happened was, every time he went up the steps of Air Force One, and if he stumbled when he was walking to the podium, and if he tripped over a word, the New York Times wrote over 120 separate pieces on Joe Biden's age. Fox News didn't stop talking about it.
This. He's actually trying to pretend like he's the victim here. He's not the victim here. You guys, we all saw it as he, Joe Biden, was getting favorable coverage. I mean, literally no one even talked about the fact that he had little cards in his hand directing him to seats, directing him where to walk, directing him what to say. You see, Hunter Biden is full of garbage. And unfortunately, you know, we watch these clips and maybe there's a portion where Sean Ryan does give pushback. But unfortunately, I have not seen any pushback on any of this. Hunter Biden traded this country in. He was not a politician. He wasn't elected to office. He did weasel his way into the White House and obviously leached onto his father to gain access and sold access to foreign countries. We know this because we have all of the backings regarding that. There's evidence. It's ample evidence of that. But he's protected. If he's not protected, then why would his father issue him a pardon? In fact, I believe it's the only one that he actually signed with his own hand. I mean, we all know the auto pen scandal will likely not hold up if the Trump administration gets their act together and finally moves forward on this one. But folks, Hunter Biden is full of garbage. He's full of garbage. And he's hoping that you're not paying attention to any of this. It's so infuriating that we're even having this discussion nowadays because, again, you know, while Hunter sits there and claims to be the victim, he was not the victim. He sold this country out. And although he regrets his business dealings with Ukraine, only because what? He got caught? Is that why he regrets it? He's lucky he didn't get criminally prosecuted at all. At all. It's so infuriating that this is what we have to deal with right now. It's so infuriating. Let's play clip three where Hunter Biden discusses the fact that he has not made any money off of any of this nowadays, or he claims to. He claims to actually be dead broke, apparently. Apparently, he has no wealth to pass down to his own kids because he's a disgrace of a man. Take a listen.
Litigation sucks. I've been tied up in criminal and civil and in courts. And, you know, I mean, like, I got, you know, I don't know, $14, $15 million in debt that I have no idea that I'm going to be able to. I have millions of dollars in debt that, you know, nobody's riding to the rescue for Hunter Biden. My dad, you know, entered the presidency as the poorest man to ever take the office, and he left the presidency not poorest. I mean, which he's fine, but, you know, like we have no generational wealth. I don't have any, you know, despite what these guys say, like there's no billions of dollars buried underneath my dad's house in Delaware.
Probably should check that house in Delaware to see if there's any money buried under it. You see, there's no way. I mean, obviously, he was addicted to drugs and was dealing with trafficked women. But folks, the reality of it is while he sits there and pretends like he's got no wealth, I'm sure he's got something stashed away. Was the art industry not profitable, Hunter? You see, that's fair pushback, right? Because we all know that he was running this very lucrative art world. And he was selling paintings left and right, as many of us heard. What happened to that? Well, no one knows, apparently. Hunter's got nothing to show for that. Nothing. He's hoping you're empathetic. He's hoping you view him as just a child. just a child dealing with addiction. The fact that this man sat here and traded our country in for foreign countries, obviously abandoning American interests. And he wasn't even an elected official. Now he pretends like these art projects, or at one point pretended like these art projects were somehow a business venture for him. Who bought that pile of garbage and how much did they spend on it? Well, of course, he never wanted to disclose that, because we all know why. But we all saw the reports that while he was leading his little art business, he was infiltrating in the White House and coddling up to his father and making sure that his father was doing probably whatever he said. In my opinion, of course. Now, Hunter has filed several lawsuits and gone after his political enemies. But oh, how quickly he drops those lawsuits when it comes time to very critical moments. The court should force Hunter to cough up all the cash that all of his victims, his lawfare victims, had to pay in legal fees. Do you want to sit here and pretend like Giuliani and everyone else was dealing with a compiled laptop that wasn't authentic? Well, make that case in court, Hunter. But I bet you he won't. Because he's been pardoned on criminal charges, and so he knows. If he dares to lie in court filings, those pardons might be useless. So he quickly dropped those lawsuits, quickly claims that he's too broke, so that if anyone goes after him, well, now he just looks like a bully who's going after a former drug addict, or former drug addict. Reality is he's an absolute disgrace of a man to pass on nothing to your children after selling out your country, and you've got nothing to give your kids. What a disgrace of a man he is. Let's turn to another story. This one's interesting. We'll go back and forth on this one a little bit because I think it's quite telling. So MSNBC, although they've rebranded themselves to MS Now, they have come out the story about the FBI director. In that story, they're claiming that the FBI director now rides around in an armed, it's one of those obviously bulletproof BMWs. Let me pull it up. They're claiming it's X5. It's part of his fleet of security detail vehicles that he has. Now, each FBI director usually has about four of them, so he has purchased those vehicles, obviously through our funding, of course, our money. And they're trying to make it seem like a bit of a scandal here. MS Now has also learned, according to four people, that Patel earlier this year pressed the FBI to purchase a new, more modern FBI jet for his use. But the proposal was abandoned over the cost estimates that were around $90 million to $115 million. You see, I'd like to see if there's any actual truth to this, like any evidence, any maybe internal emails. Because the back and forth of this, right, he's trying to say that, his comms guy is trying to say that this is false, this reporting. And it's actually misleading is what they're trying to angle it as. Ben Williamson, who runs his comms team for the FBI director, put out a statement pretty much saying that the FBI needed the updated vehicle fleet for four vehicles, which is common, obviously, we know that. So paying for traditional SUVs, the FBI always buys. Patel chose to use that, which is, I guess, the BMW. X5 is kind of what he's alluding to there. He's claiming that it's cheaper. The armored vehicles will save about $250,000 cheaper is what he's saying, saving around $1 million per. So it's $250,000 per car overall saving is what they're trying to claim is $1 million. Yeah, I don't know. We're going to wait till we get more evidence on this. I don't believe anyone anymore. That's kind of where my angle is in all of this. Everyone will sit there and push out things and tell you things. I just don't believe any of it. I truly, truly don't. You know, it's been a massive disappointment. It's still, again, I mean, we have the clock. No arrests. We were hoping maybe for a Christmas gift. Maybe. Still nothing. It's quite unfortunate, of course. Doesn't seem like anything we were hoping for is actually happening, but here we are. I want to bring you to this clip, because this one is something we've talked about extensively in regards to children who have been trafficked to the United States under the Biden regime. Many of them were. Let's play clip 7.
Yeah, right now, the restaurant side of this business is closed with a sign that's posted on the door out front saying closed for maintenance. And we do know that this is after multiple arrests were made yesterday. And investigators actually say that this case actually started months ago when one of the victims walked directly into a police station asking for help. Now, according to investigators, that case began in early September when a female minor ran away from the business, according to that report, and went to the Smithville Police Department. The report says that she told officers that she was a victim of illegal human smuggling and that she was being forced to work at that business. Now, while interviewing her, detectives noted in that report that they learned about three other minor boys involved in this case as well. Police say that those children were found living alone at a home without any adult supervision. Now, all four children were taken into protective custody and later released to Tennessee DCS. Now, investigators also say that the children were smuggled across the border, transported through Arizona, and eventually brought here to Smithville. And that report says that the smugglers, quote, are believed to be a part of the Mexican drug cartel, end quote. Now, two men have now been charged, including one accused of benefiting from forced child labor and another accused of illegally possessing firearms. Authorities say that multiple search warrants were executed at the restaurant, the market, and nearby residences where firearms and other evidence were seized. Now, the sheriff's office and police say that more arrests could come from this, but they do emphasize that this investigation is still ongoing. We'll keep you updated. Reporting live in Smithville, Maggie Weaver.
As many of you guys know, we constantly cover these stories all the time about these children who have been trafficked into the United States because of Joe Biden and all the nonsense that he put us through. Obviously, they ran one of the hugest, the most massive human trafficking schemes that we've seen in American history, and that's what's unraveling today. It's obviously gut-wrenching to continue to see. We're going to continue to dig into this story. As many of you guys know, it is absolutely disturbing. But yet again, here we are. Time and time again, we continue to cover this. They sat here and smuggled children into this country, and Democrats continue to defend it. With a straight face, by the way. Folks, I want to tell you all to go over right now to thealexjonesstore.com. We just launched the beef cooking tallow. No preservatives, no artificial ingredients, gluten-free, and packed with a ton of nutrients. You got to head on over to the shop right now. We just launched this today, and it is something you're going to want to try. It's 100% pure beef fat over at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, we just launched this just moments ago. This is big news for us. Head on over to thealexjonesstore.com and give this a try. There are so many incredible products that are meant to help you live a happier, healthier life, and this is one of them. Also, folks, it's grass-fed. That is probably one of the most nutrient-dense beef tallows you're going to find on the market right now over at thealexjonesstore.com. All right, more underway in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. We're going to dig into the Epstein files next.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do, yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, This was the best spike protein detoxer she'd found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Come to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalist. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Good morning. Welcome back. The American Journal works out here. All jumping on with us today. A lot happening over here. Just a few moments ago, the DOJ released thousands of more files from the Epstein files. Now, these files, according to the DOJ, include President Trump's name in them. We've been sifting through so far. The only times you really see him come up in regards to the files itself and Epstein are just articles, news articles, that he is, Epstein is having sent to him. He often allowed or had his staff send him news articles to get rundowns and updates. And so there are several articles that include just that. Now, again, the redactions on the entire Epstein files are just ridiculous at this point. I mean, look at this one. This is insane. It's literally just a black box as to who was on this email chain. Now, again, one would assume that this would, redaction-wise, would... I mean, yeah, you could definitely redact the actual email addresses. But who's on the email chain, I think that's fair to put out there. Especially given the fact that the Epstein file release was only supposed to redact the names of actual victims. So this is apparently transparency. Now we're digging into more as well. This is going to take probably a couple of hours to go through all of this. Again, a lot of these emails are reoccurring. And so they are duplicates because obviously they don't make anything easy, the government. So we'll continue to look through that. But I wasn't happy yesterday when I heard President Trump addressing the Epstein file release. Listen, it's pretty enraging when you listen to him talk about it because there's victims involved in all of this. You know, just to give you a little bit of background, when I was reading through the Florida grand jury report that was released, there's a victim who spoke, and she spoke to investigators, and she said that she was actually raped by Jeffrey Epstein the day before her 18th birthday. She said that she told Epstein that tomorrow she turns 18, and then that's when he actually raped her. And then he gave her a gift. That's according to the documents. We're talking about a horrific human being who should have been executed by our government if we were all playing by the same set of rules, if we all truly believe that pedophilia was absolutely disgraceful. But instead, we have governments that like to use it to their advantage to get dirt on politicians and other powerful figures. And that's exactly what looks like happened here. By looks like, I mean it happened here. I'm not going to cast any doubt. This is so infuriating when you sit back and you listen to all of this, because we see the images of Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton has girls on his lap. He's a married man, a married man. And if we're playing by the rules that victims are redacted, then why are these images redacted when it comes to the girls? The girls' faces are covered. President Trump was asked about this yesterday in clip four, and he gave quite the response. Take a listen.
Were you surprised by the number of photos of Bill Clinton in the Epstein files? And you can you commit to their full... And were you surprised by the number of photos of Bill Clinton in the Epstein files? And can you commit to their full release by the end of the year? Some of the victims were protesting that too many of them were redacted.
I know. There are a lot of people that are angry about all of the pictures of other people, you know. But I think it's terrible. Look, I don't like I like Bill Clinton. I've always gotten along with Bill Clinton. I've been nice to him. He's been nice to me. We've always gotten along. Respect him. I hate to see photos come out of him, but this is what the Democrats, mostly Democrats, and a couple of bad Republicans are asking for. So they're giving their photos of me, too. Everybody was friendly with this guy, either friendly or not friendly, but they were, you know, he was around. He was all over Palm Beach and other places. The head of Harvard was his best friend, Larry Summers. And Bill Clinton was a friend of his, but everybody was. I actually threw him out of Mar-a-Lago. And as a person that was in Mar-a-Lago, I threw him out. This is Mar-a-Lago. It's the hottest place in, I think it's the hottest place in the world, but it's the hottest place in Florida. And everybody would come here. He'd come here. We actually threw him out. But no, I don't like the pictures of Bill Clinton being shown. I don't like the pictures of other people being shown. I think it's a terrible thing. I think Bill Clinton's a big boy. He can handle it. But you probably have pictures being exposed of other people that innocently met Jeffrey Epstein years ago, many years ago, and they're, you know, highly respected bankers and lawyers and others, and they'll end up, because of guys like Massey, who's a real lowlife, whose polls are down to about 9%, by the way, in the great state of Kentucky. If you look at Kentucky, Kentucky is such a great place, but I don't know, they've got a couple of people in there that are very strange in terms of leadership, but Massey's a loser, and he likes it, and that he works with the Democrats. He's just being used by the Democrats, because what this whole thing is with Epstein is a way of trying to deflect from the tremendous success that the Republican Party has. Like, for instance, today we're building the biggest ships in the world, most powerful ships in the world, and they're asking me questions about Jeffrey Epstein. I thought that was finished. I believe they gave over 100,000 pages of documents. And there is tremendous backlash. It's an interesting question, because a lot of people are very angry that pictures are being released of other people that really had nothing to do with Epstein, but they're in a picture with him because he was at a party. And you ruin a reputation of somebody. So a lot of people are very angry that this continues. A lot of Republicans are angry because of the fact that it's just used to deflect against a tremendous success. Look, we have eight.
Okay. Let's be clear here. Bill Clinton is not a good person. So the fact that President Trump is defending him has me enraged. The fact that he's being dismissive, it has more anger towards Thomas Massey, the congressman from Kentucky, for putting this out there and trying to push for this. Yeah, you could say it's politically motivated. Okay, fine. Okay, fine. But to sit here and to pretend like Bill Clinton, the man in the photos, with girls on his lap whose faces are redacted, because again, we're told the victims have their faces redacted. We're going to sit here and pretend like this is just a political hijab. That's a political hijab. Who is that girl? Who is that girl? You have to really see, and again, I don't think President Trump, because we would have heard about it by now. But we're learning more. And we were just looking to just make cross-reference in regards to this. And it looks like CNN has confirmed it. The flight records in the latest Epstein dump show that President Trump traveled at least 8 times on Epstein flights. As according to the U.S. attorney in an email that was sent. Now, keep in mind, this email was sent January 2020. That's the email. Specifically in this email, they say that his daughter, Tiffany, and his son, Eric, are also listed. So again, I'm not going to sit here and be dismissive and pretend like this doesn't matter. It all matters. It all matters. Now, I'm not going to partake in a political hitchhop. Again, if there was something that President Trump did, we would have heard about it by now. Absolutely. But to sit here and brush this off, pretend like all of your anger should be focused on Congressman Thomas Massie? Are we out of our effing minds? We must be. We must be. Okay, Congressman Thomas Massie is obviously someone, yes, he is working with Democrats. But you signed that law, Mr. President, so cut it out. The continued attacks on Republicans is just ridiculous at this point. The American people have a right to know this information. And if you have nothing to hide, then stop being so aggressive about the issue. President Trump is listed to travel on this flight, apparently, again, with his daughter and his son. That's what they're saying. On one flight back in 93, he and Epstein were the only two passengers listed. On another, there were three, apparently. And then apparently on one of the two other flights, two of the passengers, respectfully, were women who would be possibly witnesses in the Maxwell case. So again, yes, I get it. This is politically motivated, quite likely. But then put this out yourself and stop being so aggressive about it. Stop going after Thomas Massie. That's not where your fight should be. Your fight should not be with Massie. Your fight should be with whoever did this to you. You don't hear him calling for the arrest of whoever decided to weaponize these agencies to cook up these, if they're lies, these lies. All of his anger is pointed at one person. I think that's wrong. It's the reason why his relationship with MTG is completely gone at this point. It's because this is what he did. This is what he did. His behavior is not one that I would like to egg on and celebrate. Now, it's not just that, too, folks. It's not that. Okay, so when President Trump does this, and also we heard, Mel Kay detailed for us last week about how in the Vanity Fair interview that Susie Wiles gave her clearance of Bill Clinton in the files. MSNBC did something very, very funny in this clip. I want you to listen to clip 5 because in it, Joe Scarsborough is someone who is trying his best. He's like, oh, well, Trump is cleared. Also, Bill Clinton. Just throw it out there real quick and get it in there. Take a listen.
One of the great mysteries to me and a lot of other people is we've had reporting for some time. Donald Trump is not on Epstein's list. There's nothing in there that's really damning about Donald Trump. And as Susie Wiles says, not damning about Donald Trump.
According to the chief.
Or Bill Clinton. So one of the great mysteries all along in this, not been like, what's Donald Trump hiding? What did he do? Da, 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 da. It's like, why, if he's not in these files, which all the reporting says he's not, why is he so obsessed on blocking access to the files? Is he trying to protect somebody? Joe, you got to the actual heart of the question, and it's actually not been reported. One of the reasons Marjorie Taylor Greene got on board with Massie and my effort is she fundamentally believed that Trump was not implicated, and she would call the president and say, look, just get these out. I don't know why you're not getting it out. And she would tell Massie and me, of course he's going to come around. And every press conference we had, we never made it about Donald Trump. We made it about the survivors. The survivors pleaded with Donald Trump. You can be a hero. No previous president has done this. Release the files. And what people are asking, and frankly, even I'm asking, is what are they hiding? Why is it that they're not releasing the draft 60-count indictment when they only charged Epstein with two counts? Why aren't they releasing the 82-page prosecution memo of all the implications he had with rich and powerful folks? Why are they protecting this Epstein class? And why aren't they releasing the FBI interviews? Every time they do one of these things of concealing, they're just raising further and further doubt.
All right, as we continue to sift through all of the documents, and we're doing so actively right now, we got another one for you that we wanted to bring to your attention. This one, I'd like to see the PDF on this email. All right, take a look at this email that we have. In this email, it cites the subject line reads, new investigation. Again, they redact the names of who this email is going to. You could say the names. We don't need the email addresses, but you could put the names in here, DOJ. The attachments include, and this is all we know from the PDF. There's two PDFs. It looks like they were attached to this. Palm Beach Police Reports PDF. An Epstein Black Book PDF. Oh, and there's also the flight logs PDF. So it's three total. Three total. Now, this email was sent back in 2018. Again, why not just be transparent? We don't need this blacked out. There's no purpose. There's no gain in any of this when you do just that. It's so frustrating that they would black out the emails. That's one thing. We're not going to spam people. Oh, some of you guys might. Some of you might. Especially if you get Bill Clinton's personal. But folks, you can leave the names in there. There's no reason to not tell us who's on these email lists. I FOIA all the time. I get the emails. I see who's in the emails. You don't have to give out their specific email addresses. Obviously, that is personal. You don't have to make that public record. But the names, there's no reason to redact these names. That's the DOJ going above and beyond to protect whoever's in here. Because obviously we got questions, right? Don't you? I do. I think we were told the black book's not real. Well, if they got the Epstein black book, then where the heck is it? Again, the DOJ not being transparent, not telling the American people what's actually going on here. But that's not surprising. All right, well, we'll continue to dig into this. I'm going to keep bringing you guys information throughout the rest of the show. So buckle up. We've got a long time ahead of us. We're digging in for more information, of course, but I want to bring you this because in clip 8, you know, former Congressman Matt Gaetz sat down with Tucker Carlson, and he's detailing, as many of you guys know, there was an arrest, an individual who was sent to prison for blackmailing the Gaetz family. Now, we don't really hear the backstory in a lot of this, but Matt Gaetz apparently has been very open now with Tucker Carlson in regards to what the backstory in all of this was. And I want you to remember, these are his allegations that he is making. And there's now a rebuttal to it as well. So let's play first what Matt Gaetz is claiming to Tucker Carlson in regard to the shakedown of his family. Take a listen.
For us, the shocking moment was when my father, who's a prominent person in our community, got outreach from someone he had never met that said that there were pictures and images of me with underage prostitutes and my dad needed to meet with these people right away. And so my dad, somewhat surprised and concerned, goes and talks to these people and says, what in the world are you talking about? And they said, well, Mr. Gaetz, we need $25 million from you to go and rescue a spy that is being held in Iran. And if you do that, we can make these things about your son go away, which was crazy and wild. We did what any reasonable people would do. We went to the FBI and said that we were being extorted by these folks with their false claims. And we later learned that this consulate official with the working for the Israeli government was sending text messages to Scott Adams, of all people, the Dilbert cartoonist, saying they were expecting my father to furnish this $25 million payment and that would be evidence of my consciousness of guilt.
For the American FBI agent grabbed on an Iranian island, maybe 18 or 19 years ago.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about this person. I don't know if the person's dead or alive, but it was troubling and concerning to me that someone who was getting paid by the Israeli government was involved in a criminal shakedown of a U.S. congressman. And there, someone went to jail for this. Someone, the person who conveyed this message to my father, pled guilty to the attempted fraud. And surprisingly, there was never really an effort to figure out what the government of Israel's involvement was in this matter.
But you know that the government of Israel was involved because this was an Israeli government official who was involved
yes,
in this?
Yes, a person who, his name's Jake Novak. I think he currently works for Real America's Voice, and he sent text
Wait,
messages.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the name of the official. And he sent messages to Scott Adams saying that he was involved in this scheme that was later deemed a criminal scheme to shake down my family.
So what
based
happened
on these
to
false
him?
Allegations. He got a television show.
Come on now. I didn't know any of this. I'm not playing dumb. I really didn't know that. Have you ever talked to him about it?
I have attempted to figure out, because obviously I still have a lot of unanswered questions about why he was working for a foreign government and trying to shake down my family.
Well, what's the answer, do you think?
Well, some have shared with me their concern that this was a consequence of some of the votes and positions I took in the Congress. I represented one of the most military-heavy districts in the entire country.
I think number one.
Yeah, right up there. And I saw these wars in the Middle East that my neighbors and friends had fought in as unworthy of our best, unworthy of the disruptions in parenting and the divorces and the injuries.
Suicides, yeah.
And so I took the position that we should be less entangled in these things. And I think that really shocked a number of people who thought I would be more of a neocon coming from the district I came from. And I think that, you know, that with like the Israel influence operation, it's always fire and ice. It's always outreach followed by consequence, and then outreach, and then consequence. Even to this day, there was someone who just appeared and offered to pay me a bunch of money to go to Israel and give a bunch of speeches. And, you know, you decline those offers when you don't feel they're appropriate. And then, lo and behold, it's like Greenblatt on the other side of the operation calling you an anti-Semite.
This just happened to you?
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into the next one, because obviously now he's talking about a gentleman named Jake Novak. Now, Jake Novak responded to Gates' claims. And the only reason we got to play both sides of this, because the story is absolutely wild that this happened to Gates in the first place. And again, remember, his family is very successful, very wealthy, and so he's up against that. But Jake Novak is denying what Gates said there, but also kind of admitting that there's some truth. Take a listen to clip 9.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jake Novak, and I know that my name is getting bandied about on the internet right now on social media, so I just wanted to make a very clear response and answer any questions people might have. For those of you who know me, you know it's outrageous to even think that I would be involved in any kind of extortion plot, and of course I never was. There was, however, for those of you who are wondering what this is all about, there was indeed an attempt to extort Don Gates, the father of the former Congressman Matt Gates, and I guess by extension the congressman himself, by somebody else who I don't know, never met, and he was convicted of that, and I believe he went to jail or, I guess, federal prison for that. Not me and not a person that I know, a very good friend of mine from college, Bob Kent, who's a very great patriot and Air Force veteran. He did ask Don Gates for help in an effort to try to rescue an American that he believes is being held in Iran, but there was never any blackmail involved or threat. Unfortunately for Bob, and I guess indirectly for me, at the same time Bob was making that request, somebody else was making a demand in the form of blackmail connected to the same story. He was basically piggybacking off of Bob's good work, and he has done some work to rescue people in the past. But just to make it clear, I've never spoken to Don Gates, emailed him, talked to him in any way. Same thing with Matt Gates, never had any contact with them whatsoever. In fact, I've never actually said anything negative publicly about Matt Gates or his father either. I did, however, didn't make a mistake. I did text Scott Adams and Mike Cernovich back in 2021 about the accusations that I had heard about Matt Gaetz. I did not say whether they were true or not. I did say that they had been told to me, and I was told by experts that they sounded credible. And I probably shouldn't have done that, especially while I was working as a contractor, outside contractor, media advising, and working, yes, as an independent contractor for the Israeli consulate at the time in New York, where I worked for a year and a half.
All right, so obviously, what are you telling me? Are you telling me what I think you're telling me? All right, so Matt Gaetz has some of that true, it looks like. although he's claiming not to be part of the shakedown. I think it's quite fascinating. Folks, let's go back to the Epstein files for a second, because, you know, Matt's digging away at these Epstein files right now, and he's pulling up all these gems, things that you and I were both told never exist in the first place, like this one right here. So we have two emails. Now, as I told you before, there was a PDF in one of these emails, and it looks like this was being circulated around the FBI, because specifically, one of those PDFs is labeled Epstein Black Book. Get that. Then in another email, which is being sent around by a special agent over at the FBI field office in New York, this is someone who's over in the human trafficking division. Well, look, there goes the Epstein Black Book PDF again. Attached is the unredacted version of the book. Hope this helps with what you're looking into. We should be able to get that attachment. Now, obviously, as many of you guys know, I'm going to be reaching out to the DOJ to see where that attachment is, because there's a black book and we should all be able to see it. Now, again, we don't need to see numbers. We don't need to see addresses, but we sure need to see those names. Now, again, what's going on here? I'm pretty sure we were told this never existed. From my last recollection, I mean, obviously so much has come out about all of this. And so while we're digging and sifting through all of this, I thought this was non-existent at this point. But it looks like that's not true. Now, again, why are we even hiding this information? Why not include the names of the people who are attached to these emails? Again, they don't want to do that. Why? Well, because they just don't want to include it. This is not transparency. Putting up pages like this and saying we're the most transparent administration ever is not transparency. This is not transparency. This is garbage. This is garbage. This has nothing to do with victims and everything to do with preserving whoever is on these email chains. But they're not victims. Let's see it. Let's see who these people's names are. I don't need to see the email addresses. I'm not asking you for those email addresses. I'm asking you for the basics. For the very basics. We're going to keep digging into this. Of course, there's a lot more to come in regards to all these Epstein document dumps. Hey, folks, I feel like we're just starting to get started in all of this. In the meantime, though, today's a good day over at InfoWars. Why? Well, because we just launched the Beef Cooking Tallow over at the AlexJonesStore.com. Right now, head on over to the shop. We just launched this like less than an hour ago. If you head on over to the Alex Jones Store right now, you're going to notice that we have 100% grass-fed beef tallow now at the shop. I know so many of you guys are loving tallow these days, especially given the fact that seed oils are toxic and they're awful for us. So again, we're fighting for your health over at thealexjonesstore.com. Make sure you head on over to the shop and grab yourself some of this grass-fed beef tallow. Again, it's packed with a ton of nutrients, vitamins like vitamin A, D, E, K. And, of course, it helps support hormone health over at thealexjonesstore.com right now. Make sure you take a look.
Remember, you fund this operation. I'm very thankful to you, and I'm challenging you, those that have supported, love the products, and those that have never gotten the products, to do your Christmas shopping with us. If you get your orders in by Friday, you're guaranteed to get it way before Christmas anywhere in the United States. Okay, because we ship out like a day after the orders come in, and most of the country gets it in 2 days. The rest three, Hawaii or Alaska, I think it's like four. So get your orders in now. The biggest sale so far, 60% off on the ultramethylene blue, on the Shilajit, on the Irish sea moss, incredible super nutrient compounds that just blow you away. You owe it to yourself to get it. Our information's strong, you know that. The products are just as strong and just as powerful. I'm challenging you to support the broadcast. Those of you who have never gotten a supplement, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Make the decision now. Get our ultramethylene blue. Get our Shilajit. Get our bovine colostrum. It's amazing. Experience it, and you're going to be hooked. And then we can continue on the air in a symbiotic relationship. But I need your help. Give yourself the gift of great health, clarity, and focus, and keeping powerful beacon of truth on the air. A 360 total win-win at thealexjonesstore.com. We also have limited edition fundraiser posters to keep us on the air at InfoWarsStore.com. I can't do this without you. You're not key. You're everything.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the CMOS and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
Digging through those Epstein files moments ago, the DOJ announced they were releasing thousands of more pages. And interesting enough, we found a little bit more. We found some more interesting things in regards to their files. Surprise, surprise, it looks like they weren't being transparent when they told us they were being transparent. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a PDF labeled Epstein Black Book. And there's an unredacted version being sent around the FBI back in 2019. Yeah. I felt like I was going crazy this morning. I was reading this. I was like, wait a minute. Weren't we told? I thought we were told this didn't exist. I'm looking to see if the Black Book itself has been provided to us in these redactions, of course. But again, the subject line itself literally says Black Book. Literally says Black Book. And then they're passing it around. So I don't know what else to make of this, folks. President Trump's name also coming up on the flight logs, according to an email that was sent around prior to the 2020 election. So tread lightly on that one. I wouldn't jump the gun quite yet. I'll wait till I see that one. Also in the flight, though, they also say in one instance, they say there's at least eight times. One of those instances, though, I believe his daughter was on the plane as well. And so was his son, Eric, Tiffany and Eric. And there was one other time where they claimed that he was flying by himself with Jeffrey. So we'll keep waiting. President Trump obviously denying all of this. So we'll see how this all plays out. Oh, the president just released a Christmas photo. I just got that one. I'll have to get that up on the X for you guys in just a moment. But interesting enough, folks, we're going to be digging into a lot more in the second hour of the show. Specifically, we are diving into... a lot of different topics. Venezuela, for one. As many of you guys know, tensions are heating up between the United States and Venezuela, and mainly because, well, President Trump has said that he's going to stop them from shipping drugs into our country. Keep in mind, though, Venezuela isn't one of the biggest threats when it comes to the drug imports right now. I believe the last statistic I looked at is they represent about 10%, but he's specifically funneling in on fentanyl. And so that's been his big fight. He's also obviously taking on Nicolas Maduro. Now, that's a fight that Barack Obama himself at one point was kind of interested in taking up. He did not like Nicolas Maduro, and he consistently did call out Maduro. So now President Trump is renewing that. Obviously, we've talked about it before, the oil tankers that have been seized. President Trump just announced earlier this week his plans on what to do with those oil tankers and what to do with the oil that's been seized. We'll bring that clip for you also in the second portion of this show. Plus, we're also going to talk about the DOJ, because the DOJ is fighting for your Second Amendment rights. I never thought I'd say that, and I had to ask around to make sure that this wasn't like a PR push, because, you know, I don't like to push propaganda, but I've spoken to some great legal minds, and they all say, no, I mean, it looks like the DOJ is really serious about going after those who are trying to violate the Second Amendment rights in this country, which is incredible, which is absolutely incredible. So we'll be diving into that in just a little bit as well. We'll also be continuing digging into all this Epstein stuff that's dropping. A lot is dropping in regards to Epstein. A lot is dropping in that case as well. So we look forward to that. We'll also be joined with Harrison Smith in studio in the third hour of the program, because I've got a lot of questions for him. He's ready to enlighten us about the history of Kwanzaa. I know many of you guys know this is Harrison's beat. So once I kind of thought about this story and how I wanted to cover it, there's only one person you could bring into the studio for that, and that is Harrison Smith. So he'll be joining us in a bit as well. I'll also be taking your calls to kind of kick off the holiday. So we got a lot to do over here, a lot more to dive into. Again, folks, I want to remind you, we just launched a couple of hours ago. I guess it's about 2 hours ago, maybe. Beef tallow over at the alexjonesstore.com. When you head on over to the shop, you got to take a look at this, because it's grass-fed beef tallow, 100% grass-fed. and is now available over at thealexjonesstore.com. Of course, as many of you guys know, we don't want any part in those seed oils. We're always looking for healthier alternatives, and this is one of them. As many of you guys know, beef tallow is packed with nutrients like vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E, and vitamin K. And this is a great alternative for you all at home. So if you're interested, you got to head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. We just launched this, and you get 25% off now when you become a subscriber today. So head on over to thealexjonesstore.com. Make sure you snag yourself some tallow.
I'm challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles, we've got to be able to continue to buy new product going in the future, we've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you, so now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now, do your Christmas shopping. Shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams, that's a daily serving per gummy, huge container of them, such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all joining us today. We're digging into more Epstein files as they continue to be released. We'll bring you the very latest shortly, though. Looks like there is a black book. The FBI had it. Surprise, surprise. And they were passing it around. There's a 2019 email that says just that, that Epstein, in fact, did have a black book. The subject line to the email says black book. The attachment says Epstein black book PDF. And then the FBI, someone over at the human trafficking division, is saying specifically in this email that they have attached an unredacted version for, whoever they're sending it to convenience. And so again, we're learning more. Now there's more accusations being made. And again, I opened up the show by warning you all that the DOJ was just saying that there was all these accusations that are going to be dropped in these latest files about President Trump, and they said that these are politically motivated, and that's kind of how they left it. Now, we do, according to one of the emails that was sent, and again, it's an email, it's not an actual document, but they did say that President Trump did fly on that, Epstein's plane, at least 8 times, it looks like. One of those occasions included his daughter, Tiffany, and Eric, according to that email. And then they claim he flew on the plane once with just Epstein alone, and another time with another individual as well. There was just a total of 3 of them. So we're learning more. We're getting more. We're going to keep bringing you what we're learning as it develops. But there's a lot more going on the front of Jeffrey Epstein and so much more. As many of you guys know, we have fought long and hard for these documents to understand what was happening behind the scenes in all of this. Now, unfortunately, the DOJ really going hard with these redactions, and it's very hard to kind of sift through all of this. So we're trying to tread lightly on this front. We're trying to tread lightly on this front. And we don't want to misrepresent anything that's going on right now. Joining me to discuss is Matt Tardio. He is a podcaster and a veteran, and he has also been following these Epstein document dumps. You know, Matt, we had you on scheduled for something else in regards to Venezuela, but we're going to do our best to kind of bounce around a topic to topic, so we're winging it right now. Welcome to the show, Matt. You do a great job on your podcast. And I saw you live yesterday. You were talking about Venezuela, so you're the first one to come into my mind when I was thinking about all of this. So thanks for jumping on with us. But your reaction to learning about the Epstein stuff, because we're learning specifically in this first email dump that there's a, and again, this is the quote from the email directly, Epstein black book. And I'm pretty sure, unless I've, you know, missed something, I'm pretty sure we were told there was no black book. What's going on here?
It certainly appears that there's a black book, right? Like there's no other way to get around it. And I spent a couple of years in law enforcement after I retired from the military as well. So when you start looking at things and you bring up this term like preponderance of the evidence, it would certainly seem at this point that there is 100% a black book that exists. And prior to that, floating around in the FBI was a redacted version of the black book. So then the next question is, why did the FBI have a redacted version of the black book that was floating around? And then this email communication has to exist to why there isn't an unredacted version as well that's seemingly more protected than the redacted version. Who's in there?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my many questions. And, you know, there's this, and I'm going to hold off before I dive into the details on this, because I mean, I'm so worried about the fake information that we're going into the archives that they put up so far. And we're trying to just dig to make sure that what's being posted on social media is accurate. But there's an allegation of a sexual assault claim back in 95 that we're going to dig and just make sure that the screenshot actually matches what was dumped by the DOJ. Because I'm sure you saw yesterday, Matt, there was a video. And actually, this one was dumped by the DOJ. But there was a video clip. Yeah. This specific one was a video of Jeffrey Epstein's cell. And there was a video they were trying to claim looked like. And I saw it. I was like, that looks like AI. That doesn't look real.
It's AI.
It is AI. And people were circulating it. And it looked like the DOJ actually just put it into the file specifically only to say that this was fake and this was circulating online.
Right.
But people ran it as if it was fact-based. And this is why it's so important to read through this, because we got other claims being made right now. And we're just going to make sure that it's physically there before we jump to it. But I mean, Matt, when you saw that video circulating, I mean, the first thing I thought is, this doesn't even look real. This is fake, guys. AI. Let me repeat. This is AI. This is not real. But yeah, this was circulating yesterday. Why is it that people put this stuff out there and think we won't catch on to this?
Well, I think that the people that are putting those things out there is who you specifically need to pay attention to. And I really wish that our government would do a deep dive. You know, here in the United States, you do have your First Amendment rights.
Copy.
You do have protected free speech. But that doesn't necessarily mean that people in other countries have First Amendment protected rights when they're posting things from other country purportedly to be like pro-American accounts. Mm-hmm. Right? We saw a lot of that happen when Elon ended up dumping, you know, all of the countries of origin and stuff like that over on X. So we saw very large MAGA accounts, like a million followers that were coming out of countries like Turkey, Syria, et cetera. And I think a lot of that is mis- and disinformation operations that are taking place by countries like Russia, China, and Iran. Mm-hmm. And so when those things are coming out, you know, people see that. They don't necessarily look into the country of origin that it's coming out of. And they just automatically assume it to be legitimate, and they start sharing it. And that's one of the things that, you know, the enemies of the United States are trying to do is just rip this country apart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to work if these people are complicit in this and they continue to push out this information, not fact check it. We fact check it. I try to fact check everything before putting it out there because I'm always on edge about all of this. Matt, let's talk about what we originally booked you to come on to talk about today. That's Venezuela. Obviously, tensions are heating up, and I've been talking to a lot of people about this internally, and people who have a foot in the door when it comes to this topic over at the Pentagon and other places as well. And they're telling me that things are going to start ramping up a bit. President Trump was asked about this yesterday in clip 14. Take a listen.
Venezuela to force Maduro from power.
Well, I think it probably would. I can't tell. That's up to him what he wants to do. I think it would be smart for him to do that. But again, we're going to find out. Look, Venezuela did terrible things to the United States. They sent hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people, into our open border. They sent their criminals, they sent their prisoners, they sent their drug dealers, they sent their mentally insane and incompetent people into our country more than any other country. Others did too. The Congo did. Others did too. And we just let them come right in because we were run by a stupid president. But you don't have a stupid president anymore.
We don't have a stupid president anymore. He's taking on this fight. And he's looking to push back on Nicolas Maduro. Like I said in the open, too, you know, Barack Obama was not a fan of Maduro either. In fact, coming out and calling him a bunch of nasty names, but didn't do anything to push back on this front. So far, what do you make of the president's reaction to this in regards to trying to hold Nicolas Maduro's feet to the fire, try to push him out as the leader of Venezuela?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Back in 2019, Trump was trying to push Maduro out, right? And we had a former U.S. Army Green Beret that actually had a contracting company who claims that the people that were coordinating this with him back in 2019 and 2020 were directly underneath like Trump's presidency, right? So people that were in the Oval Office that were very close to him, that were meeting with him and explaining how all of this stuff was going to go down. And of course, that plot within itself ended up getting foiled. And allegedly it was because of agency contact that basically ended up rolling over on the guy, got numerous of his people killed over inside Venezuela. And it was just this huge scandal that ended up taking place. So he's been trying to do this for years. I think what Trump's actually doing and what, you know, the DOJ and what the Department of War is now doing is using what legal authorities they have in order to accomplish that. Now, they're pushing really hard on the line of it being about drugs. And I don't think anybody in the right mind is looking at Venezuela thinking that we're going to commit over 30% of the United States Navy to go against a country that's not even in the top five of delivering drugs into the United States of America. So there's something much larger at play here, very larger at play. And I do believe personally it has to do with Russia, China, and Iran. The three boats that ended up getting seized by the United States government, the three oil tankers, are all rumored or to be confirmed to be belonging to Iran's IRGC. And what they're doing is they're taking their boats and they're bringing them to Venezuela, filling it up with Venezuelan oil, and then selling it to China. And then that money then goes into funding the IRGC, and then in turn ends up going and funding terrorist organizations like Hezbollah and the Houthis over inside of Yemen. So that's just one tiny little aspect that you kind of look at that ends up going in here. But we have way too many forces that are committed. We got major buildups over inside of Tampa with refueling tankers. We've got so many F-35. It's just so much. And we just committed more aircraft carriers to the Pacific because we're concerned about Chinese aggression. And China came out very, very ticked off yesterday, saying that they want to basically go to the international courts because they think all of this is illegal. And at the same time that they did that, you know, we ended up getting leaks from the Pentagon coming out saying that China is moving 100 nuclear weapons into silos up over by the Mongolian border. So we've got all sorts of stuff that's going on the world stage, and all roads are kind of leading back to Venezuela. Venezuela is essentially a hub for what I'm calling like the new axis of evil, right? Between China, Russia, and Iran. IRGC has been confirmed to be over inside of Venezuela. You've got Hezbollah confirmed to be over inside of Venezuela. Obviously Russia has been confirmed to be over inside of Venezuela. So you've got all of these other people that are confirming. Now the scariest part to me when it comes down to this is you have these smuggling routes that are in place between Venezuela and the United States. And we know that because these drug boats are moving back and forth. And on those boats, you can move, people, and you can move whatever goods or commodity they have on there, which are purported to be drugs. I've got contacts in the intel community that told me on some of these seized ships that they ended up getting, they ended up coming across weapons that were being, and I'm going to leave what weapons they were, but weapons from Iran that were being shipped into Venezuela. And so we've got all of these different threats. And the question is whether or not Iran, China, Russia, or any of these other terror organizations that they're all attached to are shipping weapons and personnel here into the United States to conduct terror attacks. And I think that's the very real threat that the United States is kind of concerned about. You know, underneath Biden, they said that, you know, we had how many millions of people, 20 plus million people that ended up flooding across the border. And we don't know because it's all estimations. And those people are coming from countries like Pakistan. You know, inside Pakistan, you have more foreign terror Islamic organizations than like any other country on the planet. And they were just pouring across the border, and they still are to this day. We have the most secure border in our nation's history, according to this administration, but it's still not secure. Mm-hmm. You know, 500,000 people this year estimated to be coming across the border, half a million, CBP encounters on the border this year. Well, how many of those ended up being gotaways? How many people were not caught, and what countries of origin did they end up coming from? And you talk about the Chinese, Belt and Road Initiative. You talk about the Darien Gap that's taking place down there. And so you've got not just human smuggling, drug smuggling, but very likely different weapons attacks and things like that could be coming to the United States of America. And one of the ones that scares me the absolute most was the thwarted ricin attack that took place over inside of India. Are you familiar with that one?
No, I'm not. Detail that for me, because that's interesting.
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, and it was right before we started really stepping up our game over outside of Venezuela. You had a ricin attack that ended up getting thwarted by the authorities over in India, and it was rumored that the ricin ended up getting moved into the country from Pakistan, and that they ended up making everything over inside of India. But they had enough like mash to essentially kill 250,000 plus people with the amount of ricin. You know, picture ricin like fentanyl. You know, it's just a tiny little amount of something, and if injected correctly or put into a water system, put into anything, it can only survive in particular, environments. But, I mean, you picture a kilo of frickin' ricin making its way into the United States of America and the amount of damage that could do. And so I think really the Trump administration is concerned on tons of different levels, and their ultimate goal is to get rid of Maduro, because what we're seeing is Chinese and Russian influence over inside of South America moving into our hemisphere. I'd almost equate it to like Cuban Missile Crisis 2.0 in that aspect.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating, first off, because I missed that story, but I'm going to dig into that one later. But I also wanted to talk to you about, you mentioned China and trying to obviously gain access over on this front. You know, we had the Texas agriculture commissioner on the show just a few weeks ago, and she detailed how China was looking to purchase a bunch of land here in Texas, but strategically on our border. And now, I mean, I kind of figured exactly what she was alluding to here, but we know why. I mean, they're trying their best to bring things into this country, and they're looking just to have access to our country without any types of checks and balances, without having Border Patrol intervene or anything else like that. But interesting enough, the only reason why we were able to shut that down is when the state learned about it, the state actually outbid them on the land and was able to purchase that land from potentially China getting access to it. So again, we're in a really bad situation right now. And that's why I kind of assume when you look at Venezuela and how they continue to make it all about the drug-related issues, it just doesn't make any sense to me given the fact that drugs aren't largely coming in from Venezuela, although we are doing those strikes. Again, it just seems to be a bigger issue than most people probably even know as of right now. I know we did a Rasmussen Reports poll yesterday, and I believe it was 52 or 58% of Republicans in this country believe that Venezuela also was the reason for interference in 2020. So there's a lot of things about Venezuela that have people on edge these days. But you also mentioned the oil tankers, and I wanted to get back to that because in clip 15, President Trump actually addressed what his plans are with those oil tankers that have been seized. Take a listen.
Speaking of Venezuela, oil, what are we going to do with the oil that we have?
Going to do with what?
The oil that has been seized. The United States seized 1.9 million barrels of oil on December 10th.
We're going to keep it.
Where's it going? Are we going to sell it or put it in the strategic
reserve? Maybe we'll sell it. Maybe we'll keep it. Maybe we'll use it in the strategic reserves. We're keeping it. We're keeping the ships also.
Okay, Matt, I know you're not a lawyer. You wear many hats, but not legal. Do you think we're going to be able to get away with keeping Venezuela's oil?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, like one of the main things that Trump ended up coming out with, what was it? Just a few days ago, saying that the reason that we're going after these tankers is basically to reclaim, you know, $5 billion in losses from a deal gone bad back in the 60s. And so on an international level, is anybody really going to do anything about this, right? Is anybody really going to step up and demand that we give oil back to the IRGC? I don't think that's going to be the case. And do I think that Trump is going to end up putting it in there? Yeah, it's probably going to end up in our strategic reserve. But when you really look at the amount of oil that we're talking about from these seized tankers, one of them was empty. But when we're really looking at like the amount of oil that ended up getting seized, it's absolutely nothing. You know, and you know this. Down inside Texas, you have like tons of refineries that are down there. I mean, that oil would be processed in like a morning cigarette break for some of these oil refineries, right? Like it would take nothing for them to get that done. So it's not really that much oil that we end up seizing and that we're going to end up holding on to. And that's why I go back to, listen, I think that this has way more to do with what's on those ships other than oil, and more to do with, you know, taking funding away from the IRGC. And I hate to say it, but, you know, we're also looking at a time when, you know, Netanyahu and Israel had came out and stated to the United States over the weekend that they're worried about another attack taking place, you know, by Iran on Israel. And so now at that time that we're getting this information out that Israel's complaining that Iran might end up attacking them again, we have the U.S. intervening with the IRGC and taking funding away from them at the exact same time. So, I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities here.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of possibilities. We're going to be following it, obviously, because Venezuela is going to be hot in the news cycle, I could assume, over the next few weeks, because I do believe that everything's going to ramp up quite quickly. So we'll keep following that, Matt. I also want to get to another story that dropped yesterday in regards to the Brown University shooting. Now, you've been covering it extensively on your podcast as well as on your X page as well. But I wanted to make sure that we highlighted this because the DEI police chief of Brown University has been placed on leave after failing to act on a custodial referral in regards to a person that he flagged as suspicious. This custodian apparently said that they saw dozens of instances where this killer was apparently making its way onto campus. They alerted their law enforcement agency, which is on campus, and it looks like they possibly maybe did nothing about it at all. What do you make of this latest failure? Because, you know, as we continue to go through it, we're not seeing any surveillance footage from the actual classroom, from the actual campus. We know that this is a foreigner. I keep saying this all the time. If we would have had surveillance footage on campus of this person's face or maybe his eyes or something, we possibly could have done biometrics on him because he is a foreigner, and to come in and out of this country, his biometrics are being stored on a federal database. So what do you make about this? This is another failure at a local university level. And all so far we have is a police chief who's now been placed on leave.
Yeah, this is a huge, huge sign of how liberal policies are just constantly failing here in the United States of America. You're talking about a building in particular that had a homeless man living in the basement of it. And there's no way the university was not aware of that, right? And that ends up being the guy that they end up blowing this case wide open with. A homeless guy living in the basement that's chasing him around. That tells you how poor security at that university is, that a homeless man was chasing around a suspicious person. And meanwhile, you have custodians that are inside of there staying, you know, and going to, I believe it was actually like campus security is what he ended up stating yesterday, if I remember correctly. But him going to campus security numerous times, and the response that he ends up getting from security is stating, well, you know, that's not really what we do. And it's, how do you have people wandering? Maybe he's not lying. You know, maybe that security officer is not lying. That's not within their directives. That's not exactly what they're told to do, because you got homeless guys living in the basement. I talked to students from over at the university from recent years, and what they have told me is that, generally speaking, during the study time, those doors just stay propped open with a chair. And I think the real question here, like when we start to look at this, is whether or not they were actually telling us the truth. They released a map that showed the shooter's movements before and after the shooting. And one of the areas that he traveled through was a corner just north of the actual target building itself. And that corner has three different security cameras on it. Three. Not one, not two, three cameras. How is it that you have three security cameras on a corner in which the investigation itself shows that that shooter ended up moving through there, and they ended up not releasing any information whatsoever out of those cameras? So the question is, are those cameras turned on? I don't think we've got a clear response or answer out of the university on whether or not those cameras are actually operating. I haven't heard of one of you.
No. And when they're asked about it, they completely bounce around and they try to deflect as much as they can. I saw one of, I think it was the president. Yeah, she was confronted about it, and someone pulled her out, not having to answer that question directly. Yeah. No, and I can't imagine why you'd blow it off. I mean, it's a campus in 2025. You're telling me that you guys don't have cameras, in these areas. And most importantly, too, I mean, okay, so, and this is my conspiracy here. Maybe it's possible there was a hacking situation, or their cameras went down due to a hacking situation. They just don't want to come out and say it, because so many times companies won't tell you when they're hacked or when they're being blackmailed, and they are forced to pay up a massive amount of change to the hackers itself. I don't know, Matt. Maybe they're just trying to hide the fact that maybe they were hacked prior to all of this, and their camera went down. But then when it looks like that this individual was doing a dry run and was going to the school itself and was looking around, maybe they were just looking for access so they could get in and out of without camera spotting them.
But you're talking weeks prior, right? And this is a man who actually attended that university as well. And so you're talking weeks prior. And if the camera system had been hacked and it was being held ransom, you're talking about those camera systems being down for weeks.
Yeah.
Right? Weeks. Not just a day, not just a couple days, but like weeks. And they end up not bringing this up. And I would think that there would be some record of that going towards law enforcement, especially if they, you know, because the university has to pay out money for that if that's going to be the case. So I almost say that the university probably, like most likely, just turned the dang things off. Or didn't have them on because they were worried. The other very, very troubling thing that nobody wants to talk about on this university is why the feds were there the day prior to the shooting. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't. Yeah, detail that for me.
Oh, my Lord. The university ended up putting out an alert the day before the shooting that the feds were on the ground. So the original alert for the campus safety ended up coming out and stating that there was a man purported to be a federal agent that presented himself to be a federal agent that actually detained a student and placed them in cuffs and held on to them for a period of time. And they told the students that they need to exercise caution, that you have these federal agents, people that are pretending to be feds on the ground, putting people in cuffs until they get it confirmed. Later on the day, they came out and they said that they did confirm that it was the Fugitive Task Force that was on the ground at the university. And so that's why I bring up that part of me thinks that they probably just turned the cameras off, because those cameras supposedly have facial recognition software on them. And if they don't want to work with the feds, they don't want to release that information. What do?
Yeah.
You turn them off.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden I don't have anything to turn over. You guys can't use exigency. You can't come in and just rip our servers. You can't just take this stuff from us, which law allows them to do, you know, in this case. But who is the Fugitive Task Force looking for? Why is nobody asking those questions?
Yeah.
I mean, these are all common sense things that really need to come out.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they will, because I'm sure lawsuits are going to start piling up very, very soon, and discovery won't be kind to Brown University. Matt, thank you for all the incredible work you do. I appreciate you jumping on with us and helping us understand – the very latest on all of these subject matters in Venezuela, obviously, as well as the Epstein dump that we just received the documents on, and so much more, and Brown University as well. So thank you, Matt, for joining us again, folks. Give him a follow on X at AngerTab. Give him a follow on X right now. More to come in just a few moments, guys. We're digging into the Second Amendment and how the DOJ is claiming that they are now helping fight to maintain it. Never heard that before. We'll discuss in just a few moments.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said this was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one. And the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take it as it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else it's doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after the Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there, the shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason one way or another we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalist. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're excited to have you on board. lot more to dive into. First, before we get to the DOJ saying that they're defending our Second Amendment rights, I wanted to bring you an update as we are here at InfoWars digging into the latest Epstein document dump. Interesting enough, there is an FBI intake form that has also been made public. And in this form, it looks like there appears to be a man who's claiming that he was actually raped by Jeffrey Epstein. The details of this are quite alarming. It looks like he also claims to have witnessed three other boys who may have been a victim of this as well. They were strapped down next to him. The details, I'll just post the actual article, the actual clipping on X, because I don't want to have to read this on air. It's very, very graphic. But this was taken back in, this claim was made back in 93, and it was taken, it looks like, in 2020. And then, as you could see, the person in this intake form is claiming to have witnessed Jeffrey Epstein's deformed penis, which we hear time and time again in court filings as well, which is being detailed by many, many victims. So again, this just being dropped now. We've posted this, though, if you'd like to look on my X page at Brianna Morello right now up on Twitter. Read it for yourself. But we're digging into all of this. We're digging into all of this. And as we continue to uncover more stuff that's being dropped right now, there's also a sexual assault claim that we are getting ready to bring to you in just a few moments in regards to possibly a woman who came, or a girl came forward and reported potentially the president of the United States, President Trump, and Jeffrey Epstein. Again, this is a claim being made. We are just finalizing and getting it together. We'll have it for you guys in just a bit. Obviously, a lot happening here. Even the DOJ coming out and saying you guys are going to see some things. And just know it's politically motivated. So we'll tread lightly. Let's turn to the DOJ right now, though. Let's talk about the good things that they're doing. And there's not many, but there's some. There's some. As many of you guys know, Harmeet Dillon is running the Civil Rights Division right now. And so far, she seems to be doing a really good job. She has become a Second Amendment advocate, and she's actually pushing those in her department to defend the Second Amendment. They've created this separate little division within the Civil Rights Division itself. It's a special section that is meant to take on these fights to defend your rights. Well, yesterday, they filed a lawsuit against the D.C. Metropolitan Police, claiming that the district government and MPD have violated rights, the Second Amendment rights, by prohibiting possession of an AR-15-style rifle and many other rifles that are protected under the Constitution. This is according to DOJ. Now, under D.C. law, anyone wishing to own a firearm must register it with MPD. However, the D.C. code is imposing a swift ban on registration, and thus far they've made it a really tough time to get a firearm in DC. This is what's going on, though, all across the country. Liberal cities have been doing this for quite some time now. I know, because in New York I have a lot of friends and family who are still there. They've been waiting years and years, even veterans, to get their licenses, to even have a firearm in their home. And there's a reason for that. Obviously, they do their very best to prevent and to block the American people from being able to protect themselves. And also, worth noting, the DOJ also filed a lawsuit last week against the officials in the Virgin Islands for, again, what they say is in the infringement on gun rights, requiring them to obtain a firearm permit, and how they are slowballing a lot of this. So it's a common theme here. Joining me to discuss, the Second Amendment attorney, Stephen Stamboli. He joins us now to discuss all things related to that, plus FOIAs, because full disclosure, Stephen, you are one of my great attorneys over when it comes to FOIAing, and we just recently won a lawsuit that I'm excited to break down for our audience and then help them understand how they could get involved and request documents from our government through that process. We'll get to that in a bit. I want to get your take on this, though. The DOJ saying that they are now going to be fighting for American Second Amendment rights, and they filed several lawsuits, and it looks like they're doing just that. But I'm no attorney. You are. So here's my question for you. Is the DOJ actually helping defend the Second Amendment?
Well, it's good to see you, Brianna. Thanks for having me on. It is a new day at DOJ. You know, when we had Trump 1 come in and he was talking about how he was going to be the most pro-Second Amendment president, and then he immediately did the bump stock ban and some other nonsense, color me skeptical on Trump 2 when he came in. It's like, I'm still going to be the most Second Amendment friendly president. Well, he has fulfilled that promise. Ms. Dillon, and through Pam Bondi's DOJ, has done absolutely incredible work. And I know that some people are saying, well, it doesn't go far enough yet. She hasn't gone far enough yet in doing some of the things that people in the gun rights community like myself want her to do. But it's amazing so far what she's done. I mean, we could talk about all of the different things, but Ms. Dillon argued at the Seventh Circuit a couple of months ago over the Illinois Protect Illinois Community Act assault weapons ban. She argued at the Seventh Circuit. She filed a amicus brief suggesting that the Supreme Court grants certiorari in the Wolford case, which is a case out of Hawaii. She's filed a case in the U.S. Virgin Islands saying that the U.S. Virgin Islands was violating the Second Amendment. And now we just see yesterday she filed a case in D.C. against the D.C. ban on registration of AR-15. So the things that this DOJ is doing is blowing my mind. Honest to God, would never have thought that we would have the United States government come in and support gun rights. And my hat's off to Harmeet, Pam Bondi's DOJ, and even to President Trump for keeping his promise. And given that we're in, like, you know, the first year of Trump's number two presidency, I suspect that we're going to see Ms. Dillon's unit go hot and heavy into the Second Amendment. And I'm thrilled to be a part of this and just watch what happens.
Yeah, I mean, this is great news for Americans all across the country, because time and time again, no one really challenges these blue states and these blue cities when they try to push back and try to prevent Americans from obtaining firearms, which they're legally allowed to do so. So this is good news on that front. You know, yesterday we were actually talking, I was talking with one of my guests briefly about this, and I kind of want to get your take on this. There's a lot of challenges in regards to illegal aliens having firearms. I know that this is kind of working its way right now through the federal courts, but there's been several cases. I remember back in 2024, an Obama-appointed judge actually decided to rule in favor of one illegal alien who was charged with illegally obtaining a firearm. And we were kind of going back and forth a little bit about this yesterday. Are illegal aliens, are they allowed to obtain firearms legally right now? Because it sounded like the courts were going back and forth and really truly believe that the Second Amendment applies to them.
Well, I might be a little biased here, and let me explain it. My dad is an immigrant. He came over here legally, okay? Spent his 9 to 10 years doing all this stuff to try to come here, get naturalized and whatever. I take a very dim view of illegal immigration. And if it were up to me and what I believe the Constitution says when it talks about the people, I don't believe that illegal immigrants are part of the people. I don't believe, even if the Supreme Court came out today and said illegal immigrants are part of the people, I would not subscribe to that theory. I don't believe that they do. So when you have some of these Democrat judges saying, well, if we apply Bruin, you know, the New York Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, the New York case in 2022, where the Supreme Court said you have a right to public carry, I don't believe that illegals have a right to, like, anything. I think that illegals should be kicked out of the country. That's. Like, I know that that sounds maybe a little bit harsh, but, It can't be that our Constitution allows you to walk across the border and immediately take all of the rights of citizenship. And what it does is it cheapens what American citizenship means. I believe it means something more than just, I'm here, I get all the rights of citizenship, even though I've broken the law to come across. I've done all of these bad things, but I'm here now, and so you have to treat me like one of you, and you're not. Sorry.
Yeah, and that's the problem that we're having right now. And I know the courts are playing it out right now. I look forward to that making its way to the Supreme Court, hopefully quickly, while we still have a conservative majority to weigh in on that one, because that's a big one. There's so far two cases, and I've been trying to keep my eye on them as they move around a little bit. So we'll keep watching that. But I wanted to get your take, because I know I constantly have people calling in, and I try to give them advice, but I'm no attorney, and obviously you are. But, you know, you and I have, we've gotten into a couple of fights with the government, which I know our audience loves, in regards to their refusal to comply with FOIA. So for those of you at home, FOIA is Freedom of Information Act requests, and this is one of the ways that you could force the government to be transparent. And let's be honest, folks, as you see with these Epstein files we'll be covering all day, the government does not want transparency, even though they'll look you in the eye and say that they do want transparency. But the reality of it is you have to sometimes fight to obtain that transparency. And Stephen, you've done a great job of doing that for me as my lawyer fighting this in Washington, D.C. But under the Biden regime years, surprise, surprise, they tried their very best to not even answer a lot of my FOIA requests. And I was trying to request simple things like how were Americans ending up on terror watch lists? What internal communications did they have that allowed them to be added to these lists? I also requested information regards to specifically TSA, how non-legal I would say invaders, people who came through our country illegally, who crossed into our country with no documents allegedly on them to prove who they say they are, how they were being allowed to go through TSA without showing ID and boarding on private or commercial planes, I should say. And we had to file that lawsuit, unfortunately, because TSA didn't respond. And as a result of that, we did receive some documents back from TSA. And one of those documents I published on the independentnewsroom.com, and it highlights specifically how the Biden regime was actually allowing illegal aliens into our country to fly on commercial flights. And all they had to do was hand over their documents saying that, yeah, you are a sex offender, but if you just promise to take these little courses and sign up whenever you get to where you're going, we'll let you travel around our country freely. And so these are people who obviously have sexual convictions, these sex crime convictions, and we're allowing them. They're monsters. They're predators. We're allowing them into our country. So we found that thanks to you helping me do just that. I want to talk about the TSA lawsuit as a whole, though, now that that's officially been settled and it's done for. What do you make of all of this? Because, again, TSA didn't give us everything that we requested, but we got a lot from that lawsuit, and you know better than anyone. So just your reaction overall to the TSA lawsuit that we've since settled.
So first thing with FOIA is it's almost a given that the agency will not respond and that you have to sue them. That has been my experience in doing this for, I don't know, like 11 years in FOIA litigation. When we got those documents from TSA that you had requested about the illegals being able to board, not with identification, you know, there was a big deal about us having to have the stupid real ID with the star and we had to pay additional money for it. Yeah. Apparently, citizens are treated worse in this country than if you were just across the border. It's amazing to me the documents that you received in that FOIA where they were allowing people with, I can't even remember what they called them, like a warrant or something. If, as long as you presented something with a name on it, they would just assume that you were that person. Mm-hmm. You don't have to stand in front of the little stupid picture ID thing that they make you take your picture, which I don't do, by the way.
Yeah.
They would just let you board the airplane. And, you know, credit goes to Secretary Noem. As soon as you published that, she revoked all of those policies saying that you can board with warrants or any of those other stupid things that the, in my opinion, treasonous Biden administration allowed to happen. So good job on asking for those documents. It's not something that I would have thought to ask for. But as someone that flies regularly, I saw firsthand when I was flying out of Arizona on a red eye, I was so happy, and this is going to sound dumb, but just hear me out. I was so happy at 11 o'clock flight, I was the only one in my row. Plane was half full or half empty, however you want to look at it. When the regular boarding stopped, a whole bunch of illegal immigrants got on board and completely filled up the plane. And you could tell that they were illegal, but they had their little Ziploc bag full of their charging cables, and they had their, you know, brown envelope full of their whatever documents that they had with them. And they completely filled the plane. This was on a United flight, too. And then flew to wherever, like I was flying up to Dulles. So half of that plane was full of illegals going to Dulles. Where they went after that, who knows? But it disgusts me that we allowed our country to be used basically as a third world doormat for everybody just to walk into.
Yeah, and it's really infuriating because you and I had that conversation once after you got off the flight, and I was like, okay, what can we request to figure out what they're actually doing here? And still to this day, we don't even know how much of our money went to paying for those flights, because obviously those weren't cheap, and all of these airlines were bankrolling in it, and I'm sure they actually didn't document any of this information. Yeah, I mean, think about all the children. Sadly, I mean, we're talking about over, what, 300 still, 1,000 plus children missing, migrant children missing in this country, and we can't seem to find them because a lot of these kids probably didn't even have their information taken when they were forced onto these planes.
It's so bad walking through these airports. Not now. It's not like that now, but golly, just a couple of years ago, and it's probably when we had that conversation, I was walking through the airport and I would see these ladies, these older ladies with the IOM vests on, International Office of Migration or whatever it stands for. And they were like walking kids to the planes.
Yeah.
Just like, what are we doing here? Like, are we're engaged in like minor child trafficking, basically. And I would really like Congress to say, we're going to have some hearings. How much was United paid? How much was Delta, American, all of these airlines paid to, allow all of these illegals into our country and to fly around. I mean, you had Biden with the CBP One app that you could, instead of having to cross the border illegally walking through the desert, right? You would just hop a flight from Mexico into the United States, wherever you want to go. I can't even believe that it actually happened.
No, I can't either. And it's pretty mind-blowing that this was allowed to take place and didn't really get much in the way of pushback. Everyone thought these were people coming to live a better life, and sadly, that wasn't the case. They even stopped the DNA testing, which to me was a very telling sign when they didn't test to make sure that the children actually belonged to the people that were claimed to be their parents. And so, you know, my heart breaks for the real parents because you don't know if those kids were kidnapped in their native country. You have no idea where those kids were taken from.
No one knows.
And they didn't even care. They didn't even care. You know, we did a story, too, in the beginning of the show in regards to children. One child who was able to break away from a market, I believe this was in Georgia, and run to police and get help. And her and three other kids, or that one child and three other children, were being forced into labor to work at this market. And it was, according to the reports, they believe it's tied to the Mexican cartel. So again, so many kids throughout our country are being forced into these bad situations. And it's all because of the Biden regime. And it's really frustrating to see. But for our audience, because obviously, you know, our audience knows better than anyone else. You can't trust the government. We don't trust the government. We always ask for more questions. I always ask more questions. And I think FOIA is a great way for us to do just that. And you never know what you're going to get from it. One of the most impactful in my lifetime FOIA requests was actually done by The Blaze. It was in regards to the cash that was being dished out to a lot of these media networks, Fox News, Newsmax, CBS, all of these big-time networks were all taking money to promote the vaccine. But they never disclosed, and they never disclosed. I could only speak to Fox at the time I was there. I mean, Fox was only allowing individuals who were going to say positive things about the vaccine. And if you were a critic, we weren't allowed to have them on our show. So they never disclosed that publicly to the audience. But again, we only knew about the HHS money getting paid out to all of these media outlets because of that FOIA request. So for our audience at home who want to create more transparency, not only with the FOIA at the federal level, I know it depends on each local level, but you could do this with any of your governments. Local, I did it obviously with Plano PD, as many of you guys have seen. Walk us through the steps that those at home should take at the federal level, because that's what you could attest to, when it comes to submitting these FOIA requests and what the regulations are, how long they have to wait until they receive a response. Because there is a waiting period that the government has to honor to get back to people who are submitting these requests, correct?
Sure, there is. There's a 20 business day, which the government treats like a suggestion, but it is not. It's actually the law. They have 20 business days to respond and to tell you whether or not they're going to give you the documents that you seek. They can invoke something called unusual circumstances where they get an extra 10 business days. So suffice to say, a maximum of 30 business days. It's not really that much time. But going back to your original question about what does someone need to do? Under FOIA, the government has to give you records that they have. So if you say specifically, like in your TSA lawsuit, if you were to say, you know, you want all records of X, Y, and Z, they have to produce them. FOIA does not require the agencies to answer your question. So if you phrase your request like, how much money has the Biden administration paid for illegals coming from Venezuela? They don't have to answer that. But if you couch it in the terms of, you know, all records of payments to airlines for individuals flying from Venezuela, then if they have to search for that. And if there are responsive records that aren't otherwise exempt. So they do have some exemptions like privacy, like they're not going to name, you know, Jane Doe or John Doe that got the payment to fly on United or something like that. There's national security exemptions. There's a whole variety of different exemptions, but the agency has to tell you, we found responsive records, but we're not giving them to you because they're exempt from FOIA, and here are the exemptions. So it's, I don't mean to, like, you know, be a wet blanket on any of your viewers, but it's not as simple as just filing something and then the government's like, oh, we got this records request and we need to answer it. The government almost always, to a T, does not want to respond to these, and so we have to sue them. It's better if you have an attorney help you draft your FOIA. Because if they say your FOIA, for instance, is too broad or doesn't describe the records that you want adequately, then they can just say, we don't have to answer it because it's not a proper FOIA. So, I mean, it's kind of stupid, but that's what the government does.
No, that's what they do. They do. And they use the national security excuse as well to kind of back out of things. And And, you know, you and I right now, we've got the Veterans Affair lawsuit still pending right now. But I think it just highlights the level of just I'm a little infuriated with the government. I know our audience as well. But the level of excuses that they'll turn to instead of just meeting the request and giving the information that you are rightfully asking for and you're legally allowed to ask for.
Have you told anyone about the VA FOIA specifically what they said was the reason that they're not giving you documents? The first time that they said that?
We'll let you as my attorney detail that for our audience.
It's the dumbest thing. So in your FOIA, you asked specifically for January 6th, VA benefit defendants, right? Or people that were involved with January 6th and you wanted to know why their benefits were either denied, reduced or whatever. And in one of these documents where they talked about this person's benefits being cut off, there's no names on any of these documents from the VA, but it had like a Florida director of something. And the name of the office escapes me right now. So you submitted that to the VA and said, I want all of these records dealing with this person. Here's a privacy waiver from that particular person, which is something they want if you're not requesting records about yourself. Then the VA came back and through the U.S. attorney in D.C. and said, this isn't a proper FOIA. We have no idea who this Florida director of the VA benefits department is. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, how many Florida directors of the VA do you have? And they're like, oh, it could be 30,000 different people. And we'd have to search 30,000 different email repositories. And so it doesn't pass the smell test. If I have a document, certainly with a tracking number on the document, because all of the VA documents have like a certain ID number where they can go and say, oh, this, you know, matches up with this particular person. And then they made us file a response to their motion for summary judgment, which all that does is it drives up the cost for a FOIA requester for you specifically, right? And that we had to fight, and then I had to go to a hearing and argue why that this was actually a proper FOIA, because certainly the VA would know for this specific person that we named in the FOIA who their benefit administrator was. I don't know. It's so bizarre to me. And then the judge, of course, denied their motion for summary judgment and ordered them to search. So, you know, good for the judge.
Yeah, and that's the problem here. It's good on the judge. I mean, I literally got on a call with someone from their office and we went over what I was specifically requesting. And then, you know, obviously time passes and I tried emailing this person back. I don't think I heard back. I think that's exactly what happened. But again, it's just... it's so crazy the level these people go to try to not give you things. I mean, when I try to submit a FOIA request, here's an example, to HHS, it always tells me that it's going to email me a code that I have to verify before logging into my account, and I never get the email, and there's no way to contact anyone. And so they try to create these little barriers because I get it. It's probably really frustrating for them because they get so many requests, but it's their job to do it.
Sure.
And we'll hold
it's
their
the law.
It's the law. It literally is the law.
I know. I don't understand this. When, like, let's say the IRS came to me and sends me a letter and says, you have to respond within 20 business days. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm just too busy. I don't want to.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think is going to happen? But the agency, when there's a law that says you have to respond within 20 business days and they just don't. And the courts were like, yeah, they were busy.
they will try their very best. Stephen, thank you for joining us. Again, to our audience, I want to remind you that he is a 2A lawyer and you do an incredible job at FOIA as well. So folks, if you want to learn more about his work, head on over to his website, sdslaw.us. That is where you guys go to learn more. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining me. We appreciate all your insight on this issue. And, you know, the Second Amendment stuff too is really, really important. So we appreciate it. So thank you.
Thanks, man.
All right, guys, we got more going on over here. We look forward to diving into in just a few moments. Looking forward to the next round of Epstein documents we're getting. By the way, Harrison Smith joining me in studio. He's going to give us a little bit of a history lesson on Kwanzaa. Just in time for the holiday season, of course. So we look forward to having him in studio. But again, we're learning more and more and more from these Epstein document dumps. Obviously, a lot of this is politically motivated, but we're looking through claims that are being made, and we'll get it to you once we have verified that it is authentic. I'm telling you guys, you can't trust what ends up on the internet these days. You have to go digging for it yourself, and they just released thousands of documents. So there's a lot of digging to be done. We'll have more on that in just a few moments, and we'll also be taking your calls in the third hour of the show. So in the meantime, head on over right now to thealexjonesstore.com because we just launched the beef cooking tallow that is now available over at the shop. And I'm telling you, if you're looking to have a healthier cooking experience, this is something you're going to want to snag right now over at thealexjonesstore.com. Get on over there right now and make sure you grab yourself some today.
So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't own. I'm going over there. You finance it. You paid for it with your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at InfoWars.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King, Make No Peace With Evil, St. Crusader King, and then Do Like That Still Image of Me, and it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy Unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy, in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens for their hats. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters, and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like a Star Trek Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
Throughout history, the suppression of revolutionary energy technologies points to a pattern of inventors meeting untimely or suspicious ends, apparently protecting entrenched interests in the fossil fuel narrative and traditional power systems. Nikola Tesla, who died in poverty amid claims of suppressed wireless energy transmission ideas. Tom Ogle, whose vapor fuel system promised extraordinary mileage before his 1981 death from an overdose ruled accidental or suicidal, and Stanley Meyer, developer of a controversial water fuel cell, who perished in 1998 from a cerebral aneurysm despite persistent poisoning rumors.
He has developed what's called a water fuel cell. It has taken the place of his old gas tank. The water fuel cell breaks down water molecules into oxygen and hydrogen. The hydrogen is used to run his dune buggy.
I don't care if you use rainwater, well water, city water, ocean water. If you don't have any fresh water, go ahead and use snow. If you don't have any snow available to you, then use salt water because there's no adverse effect to the fuel cell.
Meyer started working on this project 4 years ago. He's not a scientist. He isn't even a chemist. In fact, he never graduated from college. Meyer was determined, he says, to design something to protect this country from oil embargoes.
And we have calculated that if we take the dune buggy from Los Angeles to New York, we would roughly use 22 gallons of water.
The Pentagon flew a lieutenant colonel in last week to look at Meyer's invention. There's talk of possibly using it in the Star Wars defense program and to run army tanks.
Recently, Aaron Salter Jr., a retired police officer working as a security guard at a Topps grocery store in Buffalo, New York, was passionately developing a hydrogen electrolysis system to power vehicles with water as an alternative to gasoline.
You got your hydrogen for your electrolysis, you got your batteries, your water. I'm just going to start it.
That's the gas valve in the rear. It's in off position. Vehicle is running on pure hydrogen.
He was tragically killed in the 2022 racially motivated mass shooting at that store.
The defendant's planning of a racially motivated attack occurred over a span of several months.
And just a mere days ago, on December 15th, 2025, Nuno Loureiro, a distinguished MIT professor and director of the Plasma Science and Fusion Center, specializing in fusion energy, a potentially limitless clean power source, was fatally shot in his Brookline home.
Many of you know that fusion is the process that powers stars. So the reason that they shine is because at their very core, there are fusion reactions going on. that essentially release the energy that keeps the stars alive and shining. We speak of the plasma state of matter as the word that best describes the state at which the matter is at these very high pressures and temperatures that you find in the core of stars, such as the sun. And so essentially, in a sort of a slogan kind of way, what we're trying to do at the Plasma Science and Fusion Center is to recreate star-like conditions on Earth, aiming to tap that energy, the fusion energy, for electricity or energy production. In case there's questions about why we're trying to do this, there's a long list of reasons that range from no polluting emissions to inexhaustible fuel supply, very energetic reactions, so 10 to the 7 more energetic than a chemical reaction, no risk of meltdowns or long-lived nuclear waste, civilization-scale energy, and flexibility to generate fusion energy pretty much anywhere.
Apparently, a janitor named Derek, who worked as a janitor at Brown University, had previously, that is before the shooting, according to him, alerted the Brown University police that there was an intruder that had been lurking around the building, but yet nothing was done. We also learned that there were a number of electronic devices discovered in the storage unit that he had, and a number of other things, perhaps thumb drives that he had, all of which pointed the idea that this was some elaborate plot. He did a lot of casing, a lot of pre-planning, a lot of recon.
Nothing to see here. Move along. Move along. The established families, dug in for centuries with their iron grip around the throat of humanity, will never relinquish control. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams, that's a daily serving per gummy, huge container of them, such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and just reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're excited you're all jumping on board with us today. A lot happening over here, of course, specifically with the holiday season. I know. Well, President Trump's in the White House. We could say Merry Christmas, but there are some people who claim to celebrate a holiday known as Kwanzaa, and it really had me scratching my head because I never knew of a holiday before, and then I quickly learned that it's actually just not even real. Joining me to discuss is none other than Harrison Smith. He is here to break down the, I'll say it's the myth that is Kwanzaa.
The myth of Kwanzaa, exactly.
Yeah, and you're also the host of War Room, I should disclose as well.
I am. Merry Christmas. I've noticed people are saying Merry Christmas more. Do you think that's just because I'm a Christmassy type of guy, so they say it to me, or do you think that's a real thing, people are saying Christmas more?
I think it's a real thing, and I feel like we're kind of, I've been applying public pressure every time someone turns to me and says, happy holiday, like, give him like the eye.
You
look
him in the eye. Yeah, it's like, Merry Christmas.
It's Merry Christmas, Trump's president.
it's like the trans people. It's ma'am. It's Merry Christmas. Well, we know that the war on Christmas has been real. It's been going on for a while. They like to pretend it's not, but we're going to launch a counterattack now. We're going to launch a war on Kwanzaa. And, you know, I was talking, and when normal people hear me say this, normal people like my wife, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going in early tomorrow. I'm going to go on American Journal. She's like, oh, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm going to destroy Kwanzaa. And she's like, why? Like, what are you talking? Because they have this idea that it's like a religious thing, that it's like some deeply held spiritual practice. It's not. It was literally invented in the 1960s
by a radical communist black separatist because he wanted to destroy black people's love of Christianity because he saw it as an outgrowth of capitalism in America, and he hated both of those things. So it's not spiritual. It's not valid in any way. He just took a bunch of Swahili names, Swahili words, and made up things and then put it to a mockery of Hanukkah and called it a religion. Now, there's a classic article from this that people repost just about every year from Ann Coulter called Kwanzaa is a Holiday Made Up by the FBI. And she basically runs that this guy, Ron Karenga, who's the guy who invented Kwanzaa, a.k.a. Dr. Maulana Karenga, founder of the United Slaves, which was a violent national rival, nationalist rival to the Black Panthers, invented this in the 1960s basically at the behest of the FBI or under the, you know, purview of the FBI. But yeah, it's all literally just a radical communist anti-American, practice that was supposed to, you know, play into this idea that like, oh, you're reclaiming your heritage, you're reclaiming your history, you know, Africa, the homeland, the motherland, and, you know, you want to reconnect with your spiritual past. So it's playing on something that's like really deeply human and emotional, like you want to be connected to your past, but it's all just bullcrap. It's just a lie. It's just nonsense, and it's anti-Christian, which I think is particularly ridiculous, and you can read the guy's writings. I mean, he actually hated Christianity. He wanted to destroy Christianity. He wanted to, you know, create something for black people in America to break away from Christianity because he saw it as like the, you know, European oppressor religion, which it's all just communist hogwash anyway. Mm-hmm. But also, then you go and you've got articles like this. African Christianity thrived long before white men arrived. So Africa was Christian long before Europe was. Ethiopia had some of the earliest Christian communities. Many of the earliest saints are Christian. Some of my favorite, King Caleb is one of the coolest saints of all time. And we don't have to get into that right now. But the point is that, like, it's ridiculous to claim that Christianity was somehow foisted on these, you know, the poor slaves, and it was used to keep them enslaved. I mean, that's the idea that's being perpetuated by the people who created Kwanzaa, when the reality is that, you know, Christianity was, you know, one of the greatest things that ever happened to the African-American community, and the African-American community is much more strongly Christian than other, you know, racial communities in this country. And Kwanzaa is a deliberate attempt to weaken that connection by claiming that Christianity is somehow European and white and therefore racist and capitalist and bad and has to be overthrown, when the reality is Christianity has a longer history in Africa than it does in America, and if black people want to connect to their history, that would be a great place to start. So what else do you want to know about Kwanzaa? Because I've been doing the research, and it's literally just nothing. And but I do want to say that, like, I don't know, maybe in the African American community people actually do celebrate Kwanzaa. I kind of have a hard time believing that. I've never heard anybody celebrate Kwanzaa.
Well,
it's like the joke that, like, you know, I always think of the Futurama clip when there's the Santa robot and the Hanukkah robot and the Kwanzaa robot, and the Kwanzaa robot just goes around handing out a book called What the Hell is Kwanzaa? Because nobody knows what Kwanzaa is. But if you do have this, I don't mean to be insulting. Like, I understand the idea to, like, want to reach back into your past and see, but, like, that's, you know, Christmas does that. Christmas already has that aspect. The Christmas tree, the Yule log, like, these are kind of like pagan traditions that were incorporated into the Christian ceremony, and sort of their meanings were made to comport with Christianity rather than their pagan roots. Like, you can do that with Africa. Why not take some of the African traditions and incorporate them into Christianity, into the Christmas tradition, if that's what you want to do? But to create this other holiday, this fake harvest festival holiday in the middle of winter, like, it literally makes no sense, and is completely ridiculous and spiritually bankrupt and a communist plot. So that's what
Kwanzaa is. And that's just putting it nicely.
Yeah.
And you know, Harrison, I laugh about this, but, you know, Kamala Harris, when she was trying to win over voters, was running around the country trying to convince them that she was black enough for their vote, would tell them all, there's a soundbite of where she's going over her traditions of celebrating Kwanzaa with her family and her uncles, and she's got this whole illustration of what happened during Kwanzaa, and it just didn't make any sense, because it sounded like, as she's talking about it, that she's building up this story that she's just now created in her head,
right,
and manifesting it into speech, I guess. It was pretty concerning that she was able to do all of this, but here's my question for you. When did this go mainstream? Because I remember going to elementary school, which wasn't that long ago, or in '90s, this wasn't a thing until I got to like high school.
You didn't have this as a thing?
No. We had a lot of Black Americans in our school.
That's interesting. See, yeah. Everybody has a different experience with Kwanzaa. I remember it in elementary school, and then I feel like it sort of faded away or went away.
Yeah.
Darn it. I meant to start this segment with a great joke, confusing Kwanzaa with Kazaa. The moment's passed, but I was going to start by being like, well, it's a file sharing operation that predated LimeWire, yeah. Just because literally nobody knows what Kwanzaa is. Yeah, it started in 1966 is when the guy came up with it. He'd apparently invented they called them the principles. Ngozi Saba, the seven principles. So this would actually be a great thing to ask Kamala Harris, because I would bet every dollar I've ever earned that she could not name the seven principles of Ngozi Saba. And that would really put the lie to her saying that she celebrates it. I mean, I can't believe that didn't work. So she tried to pander to the African American community by relating her Kwanzaa tradition she held with her family.
So bad.
And all
and
the black
about,
people
like,
in America
a candle.
Are like,
yeah, it was bad.
What is Kwanzaa? What are you even talking about? Yeah. So there's these like seven vague ideas of togetherness that this guy basically made up himself. And, you know, I was researching this and going, well, do these values, do these principles come from anything? And it's just like, no, they're just Swahili words, basically, that this guy decided made a vague sort of pan-African philosophy, theology mindset. And it just means absolutely nothing, but it's all collectivism. It's all, you know, unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility. So that's one of the things they celebrate is collective responsibility, cooperative economics. It's literally just communism. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. It's not African. It's just communism. And so there's like three color candles and they mean something. I really have a hard time like giving any credence to this whatsoever. Again,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe people have been tricked into thinking there's some sort of spiritual significance with Kwanzaa, but it is like the most baby language religion ever, where it's just like, we're going to make religion and it's going to be about unity and togetherness and power. And it's like, what does any of this mean? This doesn't mean anything. This is all nonsense. And just because you put an African word to it doesn't imbue it with some sort of, intelligence. And again, the whole point of this, it's not like they created Kwanzaa as a standalone celebration just to celebrate African Americans or African history. It is literally, it was an attack on Christianity. Karenga created Kwanzaa to give African Americans an opportunity to celebrate themselves and their history rather than simply imitate the practice of the dominant society, i.e. mainstream American holidays dominated by Christmas. Again, you don't think they celebrate Christmas in Africa? You don't think they celebrate Christmas in Ethiopia, where some of the oldest Christian communities live?
Yeah.
It's what we, you know, see now, where they basically take something good. They say, oh, that's a negative outgrowth of white supremacy. And then so they try to demonize the good thing by associating with white people who they've already effectively demonized. So, you know, whether it's like the freedom of association or, you know, all these wonderful morals that we have, they go that those are imposed by white people. You should be irresponsible and mean. And so you're far away from the white people. They did the same thing with Christianity. Oh, that's a white people's religion. We're going to draw you away from Christianity to help you connect with your roots. And it's like, what? He described Christianity as a, quote, white religion that black people should shun, and reportedly called Jesus psychotic. Kwanzaa was designed as a secular non-Christian holiday emphasizing African heritage and communitarian values. Yeah, don't say communist, say communitarian, as if that's tricking anybody. We see through you, pinko. Oh, and I should also mention that this guy, like, went to prison for a long time for beating and imprisoning women. So,
that just adds up.
I'm not sure which candle on the Kwanzaa menorah the beating and raping women would be, but
if he was still here, Kamala Harris would raise his bail money for him.
Probably so. Yeah, he'd probably have a, you know, position on her cabinet if she ever got into office.
It's pure insanity that we've normalized this, but you know, I was just recently in Grapevine, Texas. I was just at the Christmas market that they have there. It's beautiful. They actually call it the capital of Texas. As a person who's just moved to Texas, I'm now learning about this. But it was kind of sad because although it's beautiful, we now have this issue here where people who are not or are trying to disassociate religion, Christianity with Christmas have now infiltrated and they've taken over. And so while I'm walking around, there's tons of just Muslims walking around. And it's not just here in Texas. We see it throughout Europe, too, Germany and other places. You know, so many countries now can't even have Christmas markets anymore because of the threat of Islamic terrorism that looms over them. I kind of want to talk about that a little bit, taking Christ out of Christmas, and let you kind of like dive into that angle of all of this. Because obviously that was the goal of this, was to do just that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like we started off by sort of joking about the war on Christmas. And I remember being, you know, a high schooler ever watching The Daily Show or, you know, whatever liberal nonsense was on MTV and just hearing this idea of like the war on Christmas, like... Okay, sorry, dude, the Starbucks coffee cup is red. Like, who really cares?
Yeah.
But then you get older, you get wiser, you start looking into things. You're like, wait, they are literally attacking Christmas, like very deliberately and a very sort of blatant, and have been for a long time. Again, Kwanzaa started in the 60s as literally an assault on Christmas, as an alternative to Christmas. But, you know, it goes back even farther than that. And I think people this year, it's sort of every year, it's sort of interesting. We have like... Every year Christmas comes around and every year people like realize, oh, all these Christmas songs don't talk about Jesus, huh? That's kind of weird. I mean, it's been going on for a very long time, this idea of like drawing Christmas away from its original intention. Obviously, you watch the Peanuts cartoon from the 1950s and it's about how Christmas is being too commercialized and merchandise and, you know, it's lost the spirit of the age. So I think Christmas has had a constant struggle with this and, you know, we're sort of always stuck between like this sort of imagined history where everything was wholesome and wonderful and good. And certainly there are aspects of that. Like, you know, I'm not one of these people that's like Norman Rockwell never existed. Like, no, Norman Rockwell painted the world around him. That's what America looked like back then. It was a Norman Rockwell type of world. But at the same time, the celebrations of Christmas used to just be like drunken carousing. Like the big thing in America in like the 1800s, Christmas was you go to New York and you get drunk and you have a big parade. And I mean, it was still wholesome because, you know, it was eggnog. It was jolly. It wasn't a bunch of, you know, hooligans destroying things. But it wasn't also, you know, it didn't have the vibe that Christmas now has of a quiet, your family. And, so, you know, Christmas has changed over the years. That's fine, right? It's then like, you know, the Coca-Cola company basically creates the modern Santa Claus and we sort of adopt that and, you know, people don't like that. But anyway, regardless, I think the deliberate attempt to, not just pull Christmas away from Christianity, but also just like not celebrate Christmas as much, not worry about the decorations. Cause that's one thing that struck me probably 10 years ago is going to Washington DC in June. Not sure if you know what June is. If you went to Washington DC in June, you would know because there were rainbows everywhere.
Oh.
And I remember driving around DC and going,
yes,
this is more decorations than Christmas. It literally, their pride decorations were more all encompassing. The churches, but every restaurant had, you know, big rainbow banners and flyers and just, it was everywhere. And it was, I just looked around and went, wait, this is way more decoration than they do for Christmas. They'll put up a wreath and that's it, right? They'll put lights on one tree, you know, and they'll turn them on for Christmas. But it's like they go all out for pride. So like these are things that we as a society use as like touchstones of like, what do we care about? You know, what do we define ourselves by? And I feel like as we move away from, you know, going all out for Christmas and decorating, you know, every street pole and every flagpole in town, as I remember growing up, now it's like, well, we only have, you know, budget for decorations and we really got to prioritize pride this year. Yeah. And so I think it's it's sort of a symbol of where we're going as a country. And it's a hell of a lot less fun, in my opinion.
No, it is. It's definitely getting there and it's a little infuriating to sit back and watch. But I mean, you're obviously raising a young family. How do you push back on all of this? Because I mean, the propaganda is real and I don't think people realize it. We've been infiltrated completely.
Yeah. That's a good question. How do you push back on it? I mean, I don't know. My kids are so young. It's kind of like, it kind of doesn't matter quite yet. I mean, it matters still.
Yeah, you can build them up an environment. Now.
Yeah. But you know, it's like we read the Advent story every single night and my 2-year-old still doesn't quite know who Mary is. So it's like, you know, it's like, well, how much is, you know, it really going to matter if she's watching The Grinch rather than, you know, hearing a Bible story? Is it really that big of a deal? I think that your kids learn a lot more from observation than instruction. Mm-hmm. So I think what I try to do is just like, you know, through your action, just show like, you know, faithfulness, and that you take praying seriously, and that you close your eyes and bow your head. And I think that stuff actually matters more, because they get a sense of like what you actually value through your actions. And I think that's personally sort of, I don't know. I try not to like beat my kids over the head with like, I don't know, like let them have fun. I want them to love Christmas. Like my son loves Grinch. Okay, fine. It wouldn't be my first choice, you know, of like instruction thing, but whatever. He's a green goblin that looks funny. Great. He loves Rudolph. Okay. It's not really a Christmas story, but who doesn't love Yukon Cornelius? Who doesn't love the abominable snowman? Who doesn't love a 2-year-old trying to say the word abominable?
So, I still can't do it.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I think that as long as you have like your core values inside your family, and that sort of thing is that like you can't get that from outside. It's nice to have a society and to have a culture that uplifts that and upholds that and makes it easy, you know, to celebrate those things. But that's not where you seek it out. That's generated inside your family, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's the case. I mean, this is the problem with, okay, it's not the problem because my parents are probably watching. But growing up, I'm one of seven. And so.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're a squad. 6 girls, 1 boy.
Whoa.
And I gave my brother heck.
Yeah, I bet.
He's traumatized this day.
I had 2 sisters. That was hard enough.
Yeah, but we celebrated Christmas, but we never had the religious context of any of it. And so as I've gotten older, I've learned more and obviously have started reading the Bible and stuff like that. I'm just like, man, the advantages to growing up like this is just, it defies everything else that you see in the outside world. And I think children who don't grow up with the context and kind of the vision of everything through the Bible, I think you totally have lost out big time there, because every way you're supposed to live your life is definitely written out for you, whether you choose to do so or not. So for me, it's always like, man, I think that we should be teaching every kid this, get rid of this Marxist nonsense where we push this fake religion onto people, remind them that Christmas is celebrated for the reason that we all know it is celebrated, not for this fictional characters that we like to make up and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a little discouraging seeing, but you know, it's not just us here in the United States who are dealing with this. Throughout Europe, I mean, we're sitting here and watching back as multiple Christmas markets were dealing with the ISIS threats. And you see them getting foiled, obviously, but gosh, we saw one get carried out a couple of years ago. I think it was a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
Well, every year, yeah, basically every year. I think multiple Christmas markets have been attacked this year. And yeah, some places are just not doing them anymore. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's extending to New Year's Eve. Like, they're not doing New Year's Eve on the Champs-Élysées. They're not doing New Year's Eve in Melbourne. So, you know, it's actually even a bigger problem. Like, obviously, they target Christmas markets on purpose for that. But it's like, okay, you're giving up your ability to gather in large groups. Like, that's
crazy.
That's actually crazy. Yeah. You know, the religious connection and, you know, the message of that, I always find it interesting because, again, having kids and then having to explain it to them, you sort of understand things yourself for the first time a lot. And, you know, a lot of people make a lot of the idea of like, oh, Christianity is just this imposition on a pagan holiday. It's about the winter solstice, and you have this, you know, the connection to the Norse celebrations, to the Christmas tree and the Yule log and all this stuff. But it's like, do you understand that's because, like, the Jesus story in a weird way is, like, reflected in the natural cycles and in life? Like, I remember talking about Easter with my son last year, and, you know, he's like, why do we celebrate Jesus' resurrection with, like, eggs and bunnies? Like, it doesn't seem like it makes any sense. Yeah. People can make a lot of hay of that, going, it's a pagan celebration. But it's like, well, what happened? Like, every year, the earth dies in winter and is reborn in spring. That's what is symbolized by Jesus Christ dying and being reborn. The winter solstice is, you know, the darkest time, and then, you know, the rebirth and things get brighter and the days longer from then on out. So there's this, like, like, to me, that's not some sort of, you know, weird, like, paganistic, oh, you're celebrating the stars, or, like, you know, you just think you're celebrating Jesus, really you're celebrating Venus or whatever. It's like, no, it's connecting the spiritual world with the physical world, and the very deep connections there that exist and are, like, exemplified and modeled by Jesus, starting with Christmas, him being born and dying and resurrecting in Easter. These are, like, reflections of the natural world in a really, like, profound and meaningful way, not in, like, a, I don't know, cultural appropriation way.
Yeah, well, we have about 30 seconds. How do we get rid of Kwanzaa and stop people from pretending? Okay, we don't have to get rid of them completely, but you said you were going to destroy them.
I
Or destroy it, the holiday, I should say.
I think you already figured it out. We need to get, stop the government from pushing it. I'm like 100% sure the vast majority of Kwanzaa is celebrated in elementary schools and middle schools around the country and nowhere else. I think if we stop pushing this through the education system, nobody will ever have to hear about it ever again. It'll be a cultural artifact. 20 years from now, people go, remember Kwanzaa? And the other people will go, no. And that'll be the history of Kwanzaa.
Yeah, well, that's what we should start working on because we got to get that done. Harrison, stay put. We got more to discuss in just a second. I wanted to remind our audience that over at thealexjonesstore.com right now, we just launched the Ultimate Power. If you're someone looking to boost your energy, focus, blood flow, or endurance, this formula is for you. You got to head on over to the shop right now because, folks, the more you buy, the more you save. Okay, if you buy 3 bottles, you get 30% off, 2 bottles, 20% off, and then a bottle, you get 10% off. But most importantly, folks, this is going to give you natural caffeine, which we could all use. It's about 100 milligrams, the equivalent to 1 cup of coffee without that mid-afternoon crash, which is very important. And the vitamins in this are what keep you going, B12 and B6 as well. And just going to throw this in there as well. Every purchase you get or you make over at the Alex Jones Store, specifically on this, you get 100 entries to win that Ford Raptor plus 100, gosh, I keep adding extra money to this, $10,000 cash. That's $10,000 cash over at thealexjonesstore.com. So head on over right now to the shop. Harrison, stay put. We got more to discuss in just a little bit. And man, oh man, is it about to get good.
Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot do this without you. You're the reason we're here. You're our sponsor. You are what keeps us on air. And we are launching today through the 23rd of December, the final days of Christmas sale at thealexjonesstore.com. 60% off on our best-selling ultramethylene blue, Irish sea moss gummies, and Shilajit gummies, and more. If you haven't tried our ultramethylene blue that is the strongest, best out there that we found, bar none, you're crazy. What it does for your mitochondria, your energy, your stamina, with no letdown, is insane. It's so good for you. Just research the studies. We have medical grade. We have the best. And you've seen all our guests and others that come in here, and they're just blown away by it, including those who are already taking methylene blue. They're like, wow, this is way stronger, way better. It's amazing. I'm challenging all of you. I'm challenging everybody to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds. We are in the red. I met with accountants this morning. Not too bad, but we're there. And we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and get 50% off on all future orders in perpetuity until you decide to cancel. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition, over 700 designs at thealexjonesstore.com. So my challenge to all of you is this. Get a bottle of ultramethylene blue for 60% off right now, and then you're going to be blown away and reorder it. You've heard all the people call in with their testimonials. This is the real deal. The best salesmen sell the best products. I promote and sell freedom. I promote and sell stopping the globalists. You know my information is the most accurate out there. Why on earth would you think that I would tell you this will change your life? The Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, the bovine colostrum, ultimate life force, spike protein, cardiovascular detox. All these are kick-butt products. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Please do your Christmas shopping there. We need your support. It's a win-win for everybody. You keep this operation. It's a true thorn on the side of the globalists on the air. And separately, the classic nitric boost. Dr. Judy Mikovits, you know, I didn't know she knew about it. She bought it. So this is the best formula for your heart and for spike protein and for everything else. And men notice it in the morning when they wake up. It is back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com exclusively InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost. All of you need these products. Take action now.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me. Oh, wow, Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great, and they're good for me, too. You can buy me now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. It's good to have you guys here. Harrison Smith joining us, and he was just saying the introduction. It feels kind of weird that his name's not playing.
You're right. American Journal with Brianna Morello. What?
Well, listen, Harrison, if you want your morning slot back, I won't fight you.
Please.
I don't mind sleeping in.
I hardly made it in at 10 a.m. today. I woke up at 9:30 like, oh, crap. You got to get in.
Dang it. I thought I was going to sell you on this.
No way, man. No, I miss this crew. I miss this studio quite a bit. I miss this audience. You know, people don't, they get, you know, they listen in the morning and they don't follow you in the afternoon. That's what I'm learning.
Oh.
It's okay. It's all right.
They join. Make sure you guys join him on the War Room every day, okay?
I miss you guys.
He misses you. And then call in.
Yeah.
And give him some advice.
Yeah, please.
Unsolicited
help.
Advice. Harris, I want to get into this because we're getting more and more documents. We're kind of here at InfoWars. We're sifting through the document dump that just happened by the DOJ early this morning, of course. It was about 7 in the morning when they dropped thousands of documents regarding some of them. President Trump is in these documents as well as others. And so, you know, you and I were going to go back and forth on what we're learning in all of this. I guess we can go to the first one in regards to the documents that were being sent back and forth regarding the Black Book. Now, This is the interesting part, right? Because it's kind of confusing, right? We know that there's a Black Book that has been made public record. But in regards to all of this, the FBI is passing it around, specifically the Human Trafficking Division, back in 2019. They were passing around an unredacted version. Now, again, the reason why I was like, wait a minute, hold on, this sounds quite strange, because I don't remember we were ever told about this. It could be confused for the client list. We don't have an actual client list. But how is the FBI and the DOJ unable to formulate an actual client list when they have the Black Book itself, the flight logs? I mean, they had all these PDFs they were shipping back and forth. And even in one of these emails, I mean, the Palm Beach police report, and then you have Pam Bondi, who came out back in July and told us that, oh, no, we don't actually have a client list. But this is all you'd really need to make a client list, right?
Yeah, the problem the FBI has is that they're lying. Of course they know. I mean, look, it's not just the client list. They had hard drives and videos and the blackmail, the photographs. Like, the verbiage here is imprecise, right? So it's like, there is no list. And it's like, well, there's a Black Book. There's an address book with all the people that he knew. Were they all clients? Not necessarily. So yeah, okay, there isn't a list that Jeffrey Epstein put out on Word document that says, like, my clients and their proclivities, right? Like that, okay, that doesn't exist, but we know who he went around with and we know who he provided services to. So you can make a list out of that. The redactions are not helpful. In fact, they're actually like providing less clarity. There are things like a lot of the contact book, the address book that's been released recently, had already been released before, but had been released unredacted before. And so one example people are posting is it'll say like Michael Jackson. And in the latest release, it's Michael Jackson and then a big black box. And so it makes it look like it's Michael Jackson's information there. In the unredacted version that came out years ago, it says Michael Jackson. And then under it, his contact info is for like his lawyer. And it's, you know, it's not Michael Jackson's contact info. It's Michael Jackson's professional, you know, agent's info or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are little subtleties like that where okay, the insinuation is this is Michael Jackson's personal information in this list, but in reality it was a professional contact. So, I mean, obviously there's pictures of Michael Jackson, they were together, but that's just an example of how, like, we're actually getting less clarity as these things are being released. Yeah. We're actually, it's becoming more difficult to sort of, get your finger on exactly who was doing what when. So, you know, they're making the most out of this, release, and at this point with so many of these things, like, our system is so corrupt, it's so impenetrable at this point, you kind of have to just assume everything is true and untrue at the same time. It exists and it doesn't exist. It's like we're in Schrodinger's reality where we haven't opened the box, the cat is dead and alive at the same time, and that's just how you have to approach the world. You say the same thing with, like, Charlie Kirk and all the suspicions about who really killed him. It's like, we know through our official organs we will never get the truth. We're never going to get a fully fledged, unredacted, uncensored, truthful, you know, recitation of Jeffrey Epstein, who he was, what he did, and who he was working for. We're just never going to get that ever. We can get hints at that. We can get close to that. But, you know, I've been saying for years, it's like the Epstein list, we're never getting it. It doesn't exist. If we do get it, it won't be the real thing. It's just, you know, maybe there's a Rolodex somewhere in some vault in an FBI safe house, or maybe it was picked up by an agent and squirreled away somewhere. But we're never going to get it. And what we do get is going to be designed to be released by the people in power in order to progress a certain idea, whether that's the factual information in the list or they're going to block out information to give a different impression. You have to just approach this with the idea that everybody is lying about everything the entire time. And knowing that and understanding that, you can still get to the truth through the lies. You can still glean information in reality from all the deception, but you don't take absolutely anything at face value.
Yeah, and I think that's what President Trump was trying to do. He's referred to this as a hoax, and obviously it's not the proper way to describe any of this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely not a hoax. There's definitely a ton of victims out there, and they were not appreciative of those comments. But yesterday he kind of got me fired up because there was a clip. We're going to play clip 4 for you in a second because he was talking, and he was asked specifically about the Clinton photos that were populating online.
Yeah, his response was weird.
Very weird. And yeah. Then all of a sudden the next day, these Trump documents are released in the next latest dump, and the DOJ putting out a disclaimer saying, hey, these were politically motivated. And I don't doubt that. I just don't like his response. Take a listen.
Were you surprised by the number of photos of Bill Clinton in the Epstein files? And you can you commit to their full...
What?
And were you surprised by the number of photos of Bill Clinton in the Epstein files? And can you commit to their full release by the end of the year? Some of the victims were protesting that too many of them were redacted.
I know. There are a lot of people that are angry about all of the pictures of other people, you know, but I think it's terrible. Look, I don't like I like Bill Clinton. I've always gotten along with Bill Clinton. I've been nice to him. He's been nice to me. We've always gotten along. Respect him. I hate to see photos come out of him, but this is what the Democrats, mostly Democrats, and a couple of bad Republicans are asking for. So they're giving their photos of me too. Everybody was friendly with this guy. Either friendly or not friendly, but they, you know, he was around. He was all over Palm Beach and other places. The head of Harvard was his best friend, Larry Summers. And Bill Clinton was a friend of his, but everybody was. I actually threw him out of Mar-a-Lago. And as a person that was in Mar-a-Lago, I threw him out. Mar-a-Lago, this is Mar-a-Lago. It's the hottest place in, I think it's the hottest place in the world, but it's the hottest place in Florida. And everybody would come here. He'd come here. We actually threw him out. But no, I don't like the pictures of Bill Clinton being shown. I don't like the pictures of other people being shown. I think it's a terrible thing. I think Bill Clinton's a big boy. He can handle it. But you probably have pictures being exposed of other people that innocently met Jeffrey Epstein years ago, many years ago. And they're, you know, highly respected bankers and lawyers and others. And they'll end up, because of guys like Massey, who's a real lowlife, whose polls are down to about 9%, by the way, in the great state of Kentucky. If you look at Kentucky, Kentucky is such a great place, but I don't know. They've got a couple of people in there that are very strange in terms of leadership. But Massey's a loser, and he likes it, and that he works with the Democrats. He's just being used by the Democrats, because what this whole thing is with Epstein is a way of trying to deflect from the tremendous success that the Republican Party has. Like, for instance, today we're building the biggest ships
because,
in the world.
He's making this all about Massey, which is such a strange way to go about this. All Massey's doing is advocating for sex crimes victims. And yes, I understand it's feeding into the left. They all wanted to push for this, and they suddenly all went away when they realized that there was really nothing to see here. But Your reaction to him referring to Clinton as someone he highly respects, even though the images that are coming out have redacted faces of the victims, well, we're told victims are redacted, of girls who we don't know their age, but they definitely don't look a day over 25 from the bodies alone. And they're just sitting and hanging out with Bill Clinton, the guy he respects.
You know, I don't know what to make of it. We played that clip when it first broke on War Room yesterday.
Yeah.
But only the first half. And I'm sitting here being like, how could this get any worse? And then he goes into Thomas Massie and it's like, oh, what? Like, yeah, throw that in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder why, that's just an interesting overlap. Like, it is interesting that we've got, you know, all these like political beefs, between Massie and MAGA. It's mostly centered around Israel, which of course is who I think, Jeffrey Epstein was working for. So, you know, it all goes back to that. I don't get it. I honestly don't get it for a couple reasons. One, because Bill Clinton was Jeffrey Epstein's best friend. Like, there are all these articles these days going, Jeffrey Epstein called Donald Trump his best friend. It's like, yeah, after Trump was president and he just arrested Epstein, and Epstein was working with, you know, a fellow anti-Trumper to be like, what can, you know, hey, you're a disgraced pedophile. Let's associate you with Trump. Like, real sophisticated psyop there. Real sophisticated psyop you have going there. But, like, Donald Trump was one of the first people to call this out. We played the clip last week on War Room. Donald Trump in 2015 being asked about Epstein, and just without reservations, before he was the candidate, before he was the nominee for the Republican Party, and he goes, oh, Epstein, he was a bad dude, that island, there was some weird stuff that happened on that island. You should ask Prince Andrew about that. Right? Just like, that was his response. Mm-hmm. Totally open, he didn't try to cover it up. So, I mean, the idea that this was somehow pushed by the Democrats, this is a beast entirely of Trump's own making, so that doesn't even make sense. It's almost like a flashback to 2016, where it's like Trump is treating these people in a way that he wants to be treated. He's actually being very Christian in a weird way, but he's got this idea of like, Bill Clinton was the president, I will respect the office of the presidency, then when I'm president, they will respect the office of the presidency. And it's like, dude, it's been 10 years. How can you still think that's the case? Like, what is going on? How does he not understand? Or is he just trying to cover it up because he's going, oh, if I make a big deal out of this, it'll look hypocritical when my name's in it. I'm sure that's part of it too. But why doesn't he just go for the jugular? Why doesn't he just go, Bill Clinton's all over this, he's a scumbag, he's a dirtbag, his wife made up the Russia hoax. I mean, Clinton, the Clintons, have done more damage to Donald Trump, have caused him more pain, more grief, more suffering than maybe any other group of people. And he's sitting there defending Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Make it make sense. I don't get it. I don't understand why he would defend this. And there's a couple things to this. For one, when investigators would ask Epstein's victims about who else was involved, they wouldn't say like, you were with Jeffrey Epstein. Was Bill Clinton ever there? Right? They weren't asking them leading questions. They would simply ask the open-ended question, We're looking at Jeffrey Epstein. Who else should we look at? Who else was involved in this? And like four of them immediately said Bill Clinton. Not in like, what other big American politicians are in on this? Just the open-end question, who was second to Jeffrey Epstein in this operation? And the victims themselves answered, apropos of nothing, Bill Clinton. He was the guy. He was the next guy up. The other thing was that I was on Alex Stein's show last year with one of the Epstein victims. And she recounted, she was in South Africa, was introduced to Jeffrey Epstein by Bill Clinton, who called Jeffrey Epstein the King of America. So it's like, here's this scumbag, scam artist, Bill Clinton, who was best friends with Jeffrey Epstein, who was his, you know, best pal and most, you know, beloved client. He probably had the whole punch card, you know, whatever the special offer is, whatever the, you know, mug club deal for Jeffrey Epstein's rape network happened to be. Bill Clinton was a premium subscriber. And, then Donald Trump comes out and tries to downplay and then starts attacking Thomas Massie. It's like, this is outrageous. This is ridiculous. And again, it's like, I don't know how you can complain about people talking about, Israel so much when like, that's what it all goes back to. That's who Jeffrey Epstein was working for. That's what Thomas Massie is standing up against. That's what all of this is about. So, you know, it's infuriating and it should have never happened. And it's entirely Trump's fault because he was the guy exposing Jeffrey Epstein until this year when I'm sure, you know, he determined it was either more convenient to use that information as leverage to try to get the ceasefire in Gaza. After all, we had J.D. Vance saying, and when asked about this, we had to use leverage to get the peace deal in Gaza. That could have been financial, that could have been economic or military leverage, or it could have been sexual blackmail leverage. We don't know. So maybe he's doing that, but I honestly don't know. I mean, Trump's always been an agent of chaos, but there's always been an underlying through line that you go, okay, I can see what he's trying to do. I can see what his intentions are. When it comes to Jeffrey Epstein, it is, everything's out the window. Everything is reversed every 6 hours. Everything is a hoax until it's not. It's just kind of ridiculous. Yeah, Trump, this is like the perfect headline, right? Trump breaks silence on Epstein files to defend Bill Clinton. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why? What?
It's insanity. And then Bill Clinton's also put out a statement saying, release all the files. And then he's also criticizing the DOJ under Trump, saying that it's politically motivated what they're doing right now and that they need to release everything because that clears him somehow, some way.
Uh-huh.
We all know that's not the case, though. Or we all think, I should say, well, in my opinion, because you always have to say it like that. But the reality of it is Harrison is, I mean, they have been along this cover-up for Bill Clinton for quite some time now. I mean, obviously, the Monica Lewinsky stuff was just like the top of it. And nobody else wanted to dig into all the creepy things that this man was doing. And they just let that all go by and pass by. And everyone cheers for him when they see Bill Clinton in public. But This is a guy who should be ashamed to show his face in public.
Well, you know, there's an interesting twist to that. I mean, Monica Lewinsky was likely a honeypot operation herself. She was probably tied into the Epstein network, and she was probably placed in there to seduce Bill Clinton to get...
I don't think it takes much.
Yeah.
just have a pulse.
Not exactly a difficult mission to be sent on.
Look at Hillary.
Mission impossible. You, a voluptuous young woman, are going to try to seduce Bill Clinton. Good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Well, we know this is politically motivated, right? Because the two things that we found so far that include President Trump's name came out in 2020. And this is like, if it wasn't such a serious topic, I'd be laughing right now because it's hard to have a straight face with this. Number one, this looks like this is the Southern District of New York, which as soon as you say that word or that you say that specifically, everyone's red flags go up. But they're talking about President Trump being on these flight logs on Epstein's private jet more than previously reported. And they're specifically putting this in there and saying just that, at least 8 flights between 93 and 96. And then they even say that, you know, on some of these flights, his daughter Tiffany was on board and so was Eric. And then they also say that in 93 that there was a flight where it was just the two of them, both Epstein and Trump. And then they say that there was another incident where there was 3 of them on board. We don't know who the third passenger is. It's then someone who's 20 years old. But then you turn to this, and we also just found this one as well. You know, Matt's been working really hard at pulling all this information together for us. There's an FBI intake form, which they always look at the file date. It's filed in 2020, of course, right?
Mm.
Right at the time when they were trying their very best to push him out of the election, of course. Maybe backup plan if they didn't have the election fraud down to a T. But they go into detail about how some cab driver, some limousine driver, I can't even speak today, apparently said that he overheard a phone call where Donald Trump had raped her along with Jeffrey Epstein.
Wait. Sorry, let me get this straight. So in 2020, a complaint was filed. When was this supposed to have taken place?
Let's see. This was taking place on Christmas Eve in 1999, or a day prior, was visiting his son, who he had, sorry, the ink on this was really bad, had with blank years prior, began talking to blank as she seemed to be acting strange and asked if he needed a ride home. They don't really have the best ink over at the FBI, apparently.
But regardless, you have...
They're taking this back to 95, though, yes.
Okay, so a complaint in 2020 about a conversation overheard by a limo driver in 1995?
Correct.
It's like, oh, okay. Bombshell, smoking gun here. We finally got him this time.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it's 95, and then this was filed in 2020. So again, I mean, this is a complaint. Obviously, this didn't have much in the way of leverage on it because there's nothing here besides some guy who overheard a conversation. But I mean, this is what they've been trying to throw his way. I don't know why he's still allowing this to happen. Just come out swing. Just say, hey, listen, there was a report that was made like in 2020, right by the election time, where they were obviously trying to take me out. It's politically motivated. Where just say it yourself. Why wait until the Epstein files drop to let the American people know that this was done in the first place? If he would have controlled the narrative, he would have controlled all of this from day one.
You know, I keep seeing this with Trump's administration. They always wait until the story breaks, and then they respond to it. Same thing happened with, and it's like extremely suspicious, right? You've got Steve Baker, which you know, hope he's doing better.
Yeah, he's awakened and he's speaking.
Yeah, that's fantastic news. I'm very suspicious of, you know, what happened to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he comes out with this, thing about the gate of the woman who they think is the Capitol bomber. And then like a week later, they're like, oh, we found the Capitol bomber. Actually, it's this black guy over here. You're like, case closed. And it's like,
he's
all
autistic,
right.
And we have the body cam footage. He needs to be, there's someone explaining to him, Harrison, that he's receiving a ticket because he drove too close to another vehicle that he crashed into. And he's really struggling to understand this. So this isn't someone who's a mastermind trying to take down the RNC and DNC. This is someone who is barely getting by, unfortunately, with developmental issues.
Right. There's a lot of reasons to be suspicious of that story,
yeah.
You know, not least of which is his mental competency. But mm-hmm. the timing of it, it's like, okay, if you had just come out and made this arrest a month ago, it would look a hell of a lot less suspicious than right after the big expose about the Capitol police officer. Or, you know, they did it again. I'm blanking on when it was. Well, I mean, they do it with like Charlie Kirk and the investigation into the assassination. It's like they're constantly, you know, oh, you know what it was? It was actually the assassination in Butler. It was Tucker Carlson coming out with all that information about the shooter there. And
Thomas
then,
Crooks, yeah.
Yeah, and then the FBI comes out and goes, well, we've been doing this many interviews and we have this much information. It's like, well, okay, you've given us none of that. For the last several, you know, for the last year, we've had no updates, no press conferences, no nothing. So then independent investigators go out, research it, find it.
Yeah, Harrison, we got it just what Tucker did. We got the same document that Tucker was given. And it's all authentic. And in fact, Tucker tried reaching out, and so did I, for comment from the FBI. And they told Tucker Carlson, how do you know this is authentic? And they tried to challenge his work. And then I reached out too for comments because I was told that this individual tried coming forward to give this crook's social media presence information to the FBI. And I was told that the FBI was unwilling to take it on. And I asked them about this and they ignored me. But then, in case you're wondering, shortly after it started going viral, the information that we had uncovered from this and started exposing, the FBI did put out a statement referring to us as false media reporting, even though we gave them the opportunity to speak out before it was released.
And this is the problem. It's like they're acting suspicious. Like, okay, if you have all this info, give it to us. But when you wait until it's exposed and then you come out and go, well, yeah, we've known this whole time. It's like, okay. You're lying. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. You're lying. So they should have come out and just released all this. The fact they had to make the bill go to a vote and had to, you know, pass a law through Congress. It's ridiculous. They should have just released all of this. They should have done it early on and none of this would have been an issue. And that's why I say it's a, you know, problem entirely of Trump's making. I mean, you can go back. There's the Internet Archive. There's, you know, you can go back in Google News. The Democrats pretended that the concept of elite pedophilia didn't exist for 10 years. They pretended that Jeffrey Epstein was a hoax because they were trying to protect Clinton, but they would go so far as to connect all claims of pedophilia or human trafficking to QAnon, and it was all BS. Like, they spent 10 years actually making it a lot easier for human traffickers. And the media companies who had the stories about Epstein spent 10 years crushing those stories, allowing the abuse to continue the entire time. And now they're going to come out and say, actually, you know, release the Epstein files. It's like we're an upside down nonsense Twilight Zone world. And it's because everybody's being dishonest all the time. Just be honest about it. We get it. We get it. There's a giant pedophile blackmail network that runs our country. We understand. We've known this for a while. You freaks go dress up in robes in the woods and pretend to burn a body into an owl god. Like, yes, we get it. You're all degenerate freaks. Like, this isn't a surprise. Give us the truth so we can replace you with people that are honest. It's all self-preservation at this point from the powers that be. I did not know the thing about the flight. So that is interesting.
Yeah.
I'll say it's not exactly condemnatory because, you know, Epstein wasn't caught officially until the early 2000s. So,
By the way, that's just an email from someone at the Southern District of New York.
So this could potentially be
that they maybe saw this coming and they wanted to create a FOIA trail. And if anyone were to request, this is what we'll give them.
Right.
And that email would be included. There's no document to actually back that up as of yet.
That is very interesting. He's listed as passenger on at least 8 flights, but 93 and 96. I mean,
no one knew back then.
Yeah, nobody knew. I mean, he might have known. You also, I mean, there's not so many billionaires in the world, and all the billionaires know each other. Like, and Trump mentioned that, I think, in the clip we just watched, right? He's like, everybody knew this guy, everybody. And it's like, well, if you're in a community that has, you know, 2,000 people in the entire country, and you all share planes, and you all share private islands, like, I was never all that suspicious of Trump being like, yeah, a guy hitched a ride on his plane. That's what you do when you own planes. Like, okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It's the people like Bill Gates. They go visit his island like 30 times. That to me is like, The example I always use is, you know, my grandparents live in a small town in Colorado, and I know that place like the back of my hand. Like, I know all the little alleys, I know all the little trails, like, I know it really well. I haven't been there 30 times, right? Like, that would be me going twice a year for the last 15 years. It's so many times. So it's like stuff like that. It's like he was almost living on that island. You don't go somewhere 30 times and then go, I don't know, did I ever go there? Like, that stuff to me is ridiculous, and there's so much of that with so many other people. Donald Trump flying on the plane, supposedly, allegedly. It doesn't concern me that much, but, you know, Trump's behavior is inexplicable, so.
Yeah.
We're still uncovering this, I guess.
No, it makes it worse. And I want to hear from Bill Gates' ex-wife, because I think that's absolutely egregious that she settled that divorce so quickly, after alluding to that she knew a little bit more. But Harrison Smith, you do a great job over in War Room. Everyone make sure you go tune into War Room. He misses you.
Please, I do.
Yes. Well, we appreciate you being here, Harrison. Thank you so much for jumping on with us.
This has been so fun. Thank you.
It's been a blast. It's been a blast. Folks at home, Alex is next on the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere. There's more to discuss.
Remember, you fund this operation. I'm very thankful to you, and I'm challenging you, those that have supported, love the products, and those that have never gotten the products, to do your Christmas shopping with us. If you get your orders in by Friday, you're guaranteed to get it way before Christmas anywhere in the United States. Okay, because we ship out like a day after the orders come in, and most of the country gets it in 2 days. The rest three, Hawaii or Alaska, I think it's like four. So get your orders in now. The biggest sale so far, 60% off on the ultramethylene blue, on the Shilajit, on the Irish sea moss, incredible super nutrient compounds that just blow you away. You owe it to yourself to get it. Our information's strong. You know that. The products are just as strong and just as powerful. I'm challenging you to support the broadcast. Those of you that have never gotten a supplement, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Make the decision now. Get our ultramethylene blue. Get our Shilajit. Get our bovine colostrum. It's amazing. Experience it, and you're going to be hooked. And then we can continue on the air in a symbiotic relationship. But I need your help. Give yourself the gift of great health, clarity, and focus, and keeping powerful beacon of truth on the air. A 360 total win-win at thealexjonesstore.com. We also have limited edition fundraiser posters to keep us on the air at infowarsstore.com. I can't do this without you. You're not key, you're everything.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.